You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about week 6. My notes are saying episodes 15 to 17, but that can't be right. That can't be true. I've been watching the show for a month, and I'm on episode 17, but apparently that is what is correct. But to talk about this week, I had to bring on someone who is a Survivor expert, an RHAP, you know, stalwart, someone we spoke to in the preseason as well, and really the only person I could ask to be on the podcast on a week where balls were said so many times. So please welcome Liana Boris.
Thank you, Shannon. I'm very honored to be here. Talk about some finding some balls. I prepared for the podcast. I'm dressed like a Brooklyn hipster. I have my Mexican parma. And of course, I have named my fake son Oscar, all in preparation for this. So I'm very excited to talk about crazily what is episodes 15 through 17 of this season. It feels like it just started.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's an audio podcast, but please do trust the list. The listeners need to trust that we are both sitting here dressed just like a tribal god, which is really the only way to describe Dave's weird fashion aesthetic. You know, you used to do buff or snuff on the RHAP B&B for outfits. Buff or snuff on whatever David was doing.
Yeah, I like that description. Whatever David is doing. That's definitely how it felt. I think he described it as minimal shirts and maximal accessories, which I feel like is a very great description. You know what? I love it. I love anything that Dave does. So really, if you're going to go out with a man bun, a weird, like, I guess he had his buff, like sort of sticking his hair out. It was lovely. And of course, the sash, which really just tied together the whole outfit. So I definitely give this one a buff. I loved it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Luke taking the outfit for the next episode was also iconic. This is something Luke did in his first season that made news outlets write articles comparing him to a serial killer who would wear the outfits of his victims. I know David wasn't a victim, but Luke has been wearing the clothes, you know, the iconic clothes, Henry shirt, for example, AK singlet, which I think he ended up auctioning off for charity at a point. So this isn't the Luke MO to take the fashion choices of people who've been voted off the island. I guess he just didn't expect for those fashion choices to be whatever Dave was doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dave also took a little bit of that. Didn't he end up with Nova's shirt at one point, which of course he cut to match Luke? They were broing out together. I just really think the outfits this season have been absolutely adorable from these two. I don't know where, was that the exact same? It wasn't the same like shawl, right? Because David was wearing that shawl in at least his jury villa. So I don't know where Luke is finding these clothes, but I'm here for it, especially with the "you shall not vote me out" or "you shall not blindside me" or whatever his line was, which is absolutely wonderful with the, like, the sheet over him with the stick. I'm here for all of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, in Australian Survivor, you get like a few outfits because you're out there for so long that they don't just have the one outfit. And I guess most of Dave's outfits must have just been like colorful bits of material. I mean, pretty bad choice, I would think, unless that counts as one outfit. You're like, okay, so what do you have for your second outfit? He was like, I have these five sheaths of colorful tribal material. And they were like, don't you want pants or something? I was like, nah, just the material's gonna be fine for me. So I mean, look, not the craziest thing that he did in the game, but I think it's the least we could expect for our dearly departed Dave, which was depressing. On that note, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping. So following this recap, we do have an exit interview with Sean, which was really fun. We're going to talk about Sean. I think he was a huge character in the game. Definitely check that out. Very unfortunately, we could not get X interviews with David or with John based on some like pretty extreme scheduling difficulties on their end. I really, really tried my hardest on both of these. I mean, especially with Dave, I would really hope we're going to hear from him on the podcast at some point in the future. I definitely need to get on mic with him at a point, but unfortunately we couldn't make it work. Again, really, really strict scheduling, and the network just had to, I guess, make decisions based on, you know, their prerogative and who they've been working with a little bit longer. And unfortunately, that's the one thing I can't change. I only got here this season. I can't go back in time. So believe me, if I could, I would. No one wants to talk to Dave more than me. I know it's really disappointing for everyone, probably most of all me, and something that we will try to rectify in the future. So I'm just really sorry about that. And yeah, X interviews take up, if anyone who followed my Mnet drama with Survivor South Africa, they take up way too much of my mental space, I have to say. They're like really just a chip on my shoulder. So yeah, going to keep working towards that to hopefully, you know, keep growing it and get all the X interviews that we need for you guys. But that's all the depressing stuff out of the way. Do check out Sean after this recap. But Liana, we talked to you in the preseason, 17 episodes later. I feel like I just spoke to you because I kind of just did. And it's been 17 episodes. What are you thinking about the season?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, we talk enough for it to qualify as John's but it's so crazy to think that we spoke. Yeah, I mean, what, pretty much a month ago, trying to break down this cast, the little information that we had about them. Mm-hmm. Some people we've gotten to know a little better. Some people we still never learned anything about. see the contender women, sans Daisy, I suppose.
Yeah, and none of them were in our preseason. Like, we didn't have anything on them in the preseason. Season anyway, so it makes sense. Daisy was the only one that had been released at the time, and it was correct.
Yeah, I think I think it was only Daisy. And I mean, even for her, it was like a very short thing, you know. It was just about her being outspoken and like a blunt character. I guess we've learned a little bit more about her. So that's been nice, especially given her horrendous idol plays. Although, you know, I'm sure if I were in her situation, I would probably do the same thing. But, you know, overall, I'm really, really enjoying the season. I think that the characters have been so much fun. And I know that the unequal editing can be, can be unfortunate. But the people that they've chosen to invest in terms of characters, and David obviously being a huge one, was just so fun to watch him play this season and get his eventual downfall. You know, it's funny, that episode where he goes, I actually probably have the least amount of notes because it was just something that I was expecting for so long. You know, when is David going to have his downfall? When is this going to happen? It was sad to watch it go down, but the number of quotes that he had about, I, you know, haven't felt this much in control, I've never felt more confident, all of that was still like,
I'm
so
just
prime
for
watch.
A blindside, he basically should have said.
Yeah, like, we're definitely all on the same page. Like, oh no, David! And the audience knows. That was really, really wonderful to watch. So, you know, all in all, I'm really enjoying this season. It feels like it's just zooming by, given the fact that there were 5 episodes that first week and then 3 episodes every week since. It's a little bit of overload, but the fact that I'm so invested in this season, I think, makes it totally doable. And I'm very excited to see how this concludes.
Yeah, we had a couple of comments about like the David Boot episode and the editing around that, because, you know, we talk about Survivor South Africa and the editing's really clear and you kind of know what everyone is doing and who's going to go home and everything like that. And we haven't really had that in Australian Survivor. Australian Survivor is like, is it going to be person A, person B, person C might play an idol, or it could be, you know, option D. Like, they really try and get the suspense, like, almost too much. At the point I've said, I feel like they're lying to the audience sometimes with like these unnecessary other plans when it could be fine to just be between A and B or whatever, and they're always packing in every possible opportunity so that you're like so suspenseful. And the David Boot was not that. I mean, the only thing was, is he going to play an idol? It didn't really seem like he was going to play the idol, so we kind of saw the downfall happen, and I enjoyed that. I mean, it's a very, very, it's a thing that they often do in these types of blindsides. I mean, we definitely got it for Henry, and he went out in the exact same placement as Henry, and we've also compared him to Henry in the past. So I think that there's a lot of similarities there. I'm talking about Survivor South Africa, spoiler alert, but we had this pretty recently with Sipe, who was a huge character, went out also in a similar spot with a huge blindside, and you just watched the move happen like a car crash in slow motion. And I think that there's credit, like, there's merit to that type of edit. It doesn't always have to be, you know, it is fun when it's suspenseful. And he's like, oh my God, is it going to be Luke or Sean? And I believe me, my heart was out of my chest. And we're going to talk about that episode. But it's also interesting where it's like 99% you're watching the car crash. 1% might they play the idol? David has had a good read before. I really enjoyed it. It was something very different. And highest ratings of the season. I know some people complained that the promo was too obvious, but you know what? Unfortunately, the system does work. The ratings of the season have been phenomenal. It is taking the block to church. And, you know, that is a weird sentence for our international viewers. The block has been hard to beat. It's doing really well against the block. It's doing that. I think that's why we've been getting three episodes for so long.
Sorry, the block is a TV show?
Yes. Oh, you guys don't have the block. You're lucky.
No, what is the block?
It's Survivor's main competitor, which makes me hate it probably more than I should for someone who's never watched it. It's just like a house renovation show that has always had the number on Australian Survivor, and this season really doesn't. So it's been doing amazing against Australia's Got Talent as well, I think. Like, it's honestly just had such a good season. So I'm so glad people are tuning in because it's been obviously so great. And, you know, the promos and stuff people sometimes complain about, but it is working, and that's our priority. So I want to get into talking about some of these episodes. Let's go back while David was still in the game, which is always a fun thing to talk about, and go back to this episode where Sean was voted out. And we have this nighttime twist where they make Last Gasp a challenge so difficult that literally there were news articles. I don't know why the news articles keep happening. Now you're understanding the casual news cycle of Australian Survivor. But last season when they did it, there was like, this challenge is cruel. And the headlines were like, it's gone too far. And they were like, okay, Australian public, we'll take that. And we're going to put it at night in the freezing cold water. Ball or move by the show, I have to say. I really love this. And then obviously going straight to tribal, but not really, was kind of a fun innovation too. What did you think about it?
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to address the fact, okay, the block is definitely my ops. The block yes, is the worst. I've never seen it. I've never heard of it until now. But obviously, I'm Team Australian Survivor. Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in terms of the way that this immunity challenge was executed, I mean, it looks absolutely terrifying. I would never want to do it. I would never want to be out there. However, when I'm at home, I'm like, yeah, make me be in the cold water. So I'm definitely here for it. I thought it was really cool. It was definitely, you know, enough of a tweak that makes it a little bit more interesting, especially like you said, with them having to go to tribal right after without sort of completely changing things. So I know that Baden has done on Reddit, he's done some like summary kind of things of like his takes on the season. And he was talking about just how incredibly cold it was, especially like as soon as the sun started going down, it was really, really cold. And I mean, obviously, I have to believe him. Like that just seems absolutely terrifying, especially from the fact that the water, I don't know how Dave did that. Like that was just so incredibly impressive. You know, there was something about like he was using a specific breathing method or something to be able to stay in there longer. I thought also it seemed like he slid down on his bars, so like maybe it was more shallow, like in that area. But it was, yeah, a really intense challenge. And then to have to go right to tribal right after that with the seemingly infinite ring of torches with the bonfires there, it was like, okay, so we have one. And then all of a sudden it was like the new the champions were like at a second one. And then I was confused exactly as to how that worked. It would have been nice to have maybe like a big picture look at that. But that was kind of cool to watch these groups just sort of like go back and forth. It was almost like you take all the strategizing that happens in the jungle and condense it down to these like bonfire patches all out on the beach. So that was pretty cool. I actually didn't think they were going to have that much time to talk. So I was actually thankful that there was at least some time to strategize.
Yeah, I mean, well, Dave was willing to straight up drown himself for this game, and I would expect nothing less. Like when they pulled him out, he was like, they were like, you won, and he was like, what? Like he was like, yeah. They pulled out like his like lifeless body from under the bars. Like he was basically staying down there or straight up dying, like I truly believe. So I mean, he did it incredibly, and obviously so did Sean, and we were pumped up with this whole David versus Sean battle. Mm-hmm. And it was epic. It was totally epic that it was in this challenge as well at night. And these two people left going up against each other was so really just like an epic thing to watch. And then, yeah, going to like the endless rings of fire, as you said, I enjoyed it because I don't like when they go straight to tribal council because I think that stifles mm-hmm. strategy. I mean, I want to be able to see people talk about things. That's what the game is about. I don't want to see someone go home just because they didn't have time to talk. That's not fun for me. That's just, mm-hmm. you know, that's just manufactured drama. That's not actual drama. I want to see people strategize on Survivor. But I love this because it was like, it was concentrated strategy, as you said. It actually made me feel like they were in like a fan-made Survivor game, you know, where people go out for like a weekend and play Survivor, and it takes that kind of like all the living part, and it's just like strategy, 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 and that was, it was like hyper-strategic for this, you know, I don't know however long they were there, if we were watching it in real time, but they had like an hour to discuss it, and I think they struck a pretty good balance between like having the time to talk. Sean could put his plan out there in a more private manner, but it was also like so chaotic, and it did make the tribal kind of live because it was like just not enough time. So I thought they struck a really good balance, and I also thought it was funny that a lot of the groups that came together seemed to literally just be together because they happened to be standing next to each other. It was like, all right, so Pia, Simon, Janine, Harry, John, like all these like complete randoms, like we'll all vote together. It's like, you guys are such a random group. Like there's nothing you have in common other than the fact that you happen to be standing around this one bonfire. That is not how lasting connections are made.
It was like if you picked names out of a hat.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, so like Abby wasn't there, so it wasn't even the three women. It was like Pia and Janine by themselves, and then Simon was there because, you know, I don't know. No one knows where Simon is. He's a ghost. Yeah. I wasn't entirely sure he was on the season until I believe someone named Simon Black won immunity in the last episode.
Simon Purple and then, is what they're calling him now. Like, we've changed the color. Yeah.
And then like John and Daisy and like Harry's trying to make this pitch. I was like, who are you even talking to? Like, what is going on right now? That was really fun to see. And I'm not entirely sure, and we can debate this, how live we think the actual tribal council was. Because when we see the votes come out, you know, there does seem to be some sort of vote split plan with the 7 votes on Sean and the 2 votes on Daisy. So it seemed that like somewhere along the lines, whether or not it happened in the Infinite Ring of Fire or whether or not it was actually at the tribal that they were able to sort of make this come together. But there was seemed to be something in place. I know like Janine kept talking about the original plan. So I don't know if that was what then instilled that vote split. I'm not entirely sure. But it definitely brought a lot of excitement to this tribal council.
Yeah, I think they had a plan, but because it had been so short and chaotic, it did necessitate Janine kind of like confirming the plan, you know, and maybe being a little bit, she's always heavy-handed at tribal, but being a little bit more even than necessary than she's been in the past to just make sure it was going through, because you don't have the hours and hours at the beach to kind of talk about it. So I feel like it did bring like not a live element, but certainly something where the plan had to become a little bit public, maybe just for lack of time. Certainly they were throwing it out. I mean, Sean actually threw out Luke's name at tribal council. Like it became quite public. I think maybe those were the last few conversations they would have had on the beach had they had the time, but just those last confirming conversations had to kind of go to that like public forum of tribal council, which I thought was pretty good. But I mean, Janine did put out a blog post. The season loves to blog. But no, it's good insight. She's basically, she talked about the Luke plan and she literally called it stupid. I loved it. She was like, the Luke plan was stupid. And one of the reasons was something you mentioned. She was like, well, Abby wasn't even in the conversation where we came up with it. So we weren't going to blindside Abby and then go to be in the bottom of the contenders. This is one of the problems. But even so, she's like, Sean is a massive threat. Luke's going to work with me further into the future. And I don't really feel like this was something that was ever going to happen. I mean, you can kind of tell when Janine's in confessional saying, it's something we could do. You know, that's the producer being like, and why would you do the Luke plan? She's like, well, here are the benefits. So it's something theoretically one could do. I won't, but one could, so I don't think it was something that was ever happening. I mean, they had been talking about the Dave boot for ages on the next time on of the next step. I mean, of the previously on the next episode, they say that if Janine says that if David had won immunity, he would have gone. But I don't think that's something we actually saw in the episode itself, which is weird. But they'd certainly been talking about the David boot for a while. We'll talk about the next episode, but I still think it was a little too early. I think this would have been way too early. They would have been putting the numbers up 5-5. And even so, David was immune, and it would have been Luke, who we see in this episode has such a good relationship with Janine and is someone they really do trust. And even though they don't work with him in the next episode, I really feel like it's just because he was so close to Dave and not because of their actual relationship with Luke. I mean, they go back to working with him in the episode after that. So I don't think they were evening it up to 5-5, maybe for Dave. And I think that would have been a mistake, but definitely not for Luke. I don't think this was something that was really ever reasonably going to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think the evidence of the Luke Janine segment at the beginning of the episode about, you know, like Luke saying some people just click and then Janine on the other side saying he's one of the good guys. Like you see this relationship coming from both sides. And so I think that that was pretty clear that they weren't going to, you know, inevitably flip and take out Luke, especially also when Harry was trying to pitch Luke. You know, you could see Janine's face and like her and Pierre kind of looking at each other like, yeah, what are we going to say in this moment? Because, you know, clearly they're not going to go for Luke. But yeah, it seemed like in that tribal council, Sean had really, you know, all of his confessionals were like, how much I hate Dave. I hate Dave so much. Like Dave gave me a fake idol. Dave.
Kind of like this podcast where we're just talking about Dave. Yeah. But this is kind of like the show. I mean, he had 105 confessionals. The show is about Dave.
He had 105 confessionals.
He did. I guess
we're on episode
Dave.
Like 16.
Yeah, but still a lot. It's a lot of confessionals.
It's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. But Sean seems to, then he's like, I can't throw Dave under the bus. I'm just going to throw Luke repeatedly under the bus and try to drive it over him several times. But of course, to no avail. I mean, there was no way personally, I didn't think that Janine was ever going to flip, you know, and take the champions with her, at least a subset of them, to vote out Luke. Like, I didn't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, like, as a Luke stan, my head is saying they're not going to turn on Luke. That would be really dumb. As literally Janine called it stupid in her later blog post, it wouldn't make any sense. But then I'm like, they've also had some other ideas that make not a lot of sense to me. I mean, Janine also said in her blog post that they were thinking of voting out Simon pre-merge instead of Harry because they didn't want to, you know, they thought they would have to put a vote on him, which we said last week might be a good idea if Harry had immunity. And then they thought, well, that might make him flip, so let's just vote him out completely and try work with Harry. So basically not do any half measure, which is an interesting insight. And definitely I see that perspective. I think I still disagree with it because look how Harry is like still coming for Janine. Mm-hmm. Best to take him out. But I understand the fear that they were like, you know, they didn't want to have to put one vote on someone and keep him around. So they'd rather just go all in with either one of them. And they couldn't go all in with Simon because they needed to protect against an idol. So, you know, I'm getting these insights from Janine and it seems to make sense. But I also know that she does do some crazy things, you know, told Sean about David's idol and then it's throwing challenges. Not that all these things are crazy, but I should say maybe some like big moves. But I did think 95% probably she's not going to turn on Luke. We literally just saw an entire scene about how she loves Luke and everything like that. I think that was in this episode. A lot of the episodes blur together for me after the whole week. But then the Luke stan in me is still shaking as I watch this episode with my family, who are like very casually just watching it and enjoying it. And I'm just like, my heart is beating through my chest. So like, while my brain is like, it's okay, he's not going home, my heart is like, help me, please. I can't go through this every week and Luke might go home. So yeah, I think that there's two different parts of it. I didn't think it was, I mean, like to talk about Sean, what else could he have done? Like, I actually thought it was a pretty good pitch. Luke is an, you know, perennial threat. Someone who could maybe always throw out because he's such a huge jury threat and he's a good strategist and he has so many social connections. And it's like, maybe we should just all take him out. Kind of like we all take out Dave because he's such a huge threat in the next episode. But at the same time, again, Luke's relationships are so good. That's the whole point. And they kept talking about physical threat for Sean versus social strategic threat for Luke. But also, Sean was a social strategic threat and it wasn't social versus physical. We all know it was champions versus contenders. And Sean was really, I think, the spiritual center and the leader of those contenders. That's the main reason he had to go, more than being a physical threat, more than being a good player, which I think that he was. Really, he was like the core factor of that group that was their ops at that time. And yeah, he had to go for that reason.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard for me to get a sense of what I think Sean's long-term gameplay was going to look like from his perspective. And I don't know if that's because he had the confessionals and we just didn't get to see them. But, you know, it seemed like at every step of the way, it was sort of a little bit of a short-term measure of like, okay, who are we going to get out this week, instead of this is my long-term vision of at least what I think is going to happen over the next couple tribals. And so I think in this moment, yes, Sean throwing Luke under the bus probably was the best move. But I think it would have been interesting to hear sort of what maybe his broader plan was like, you know, because like, I don't know, maybe he should have fought harder on the Andy vote. Like, I don't know what the situation was or what he sort of envisioned then would happen once the champions had the numbers, because it still looked pretty clear that it was champions versus contenders. And like, what was his sort of long-term play here? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really like Sean. It kind of took for him to get out of the game and stop being the opposing force to my two favorite players of David and Luke for me to realize how much I like Sean. I thought, you know, really refreshing to get a football player who's also a fan of the show, who I thought, you know, was thinking pretty smartly about the show. I mean, he didn't go to very many tribal councils, but something that just stood out to me was, like, in my exit interviews with all the contenders, they were just like, I just like Sean so much. You know, talk to Hannah, why did you vote Sean back into your tribe? I just like that guy. You know, Andy, why, you didn't want to vote out Sean over David. He just liked Sean, you know, and social capital, I've said, is the bread and butter of the show, and Sean was, you know, eating pretty well with the bread and butter because everyone liked him. He had such a great social game, and I kind of feel like if it's a contender strong game, to the end, even though he's a huge physical threat, I think he's in a pretty good spot. But I almost think that he was doomed by the fact that his allies around him had bad relationships with each other. Like, he had good reads, but while he was on the other tribe, Daisy had had such a bad relationship with Sam that she turned on Sam, and then, you know, we talked about it last week, but he wanted to keep Andy around, which was definitely the best thing for him, and he was just outnumbered. Other people didn't want to work with Andy, and other people, you know, had other pathways, like a Baden maybe has other pathways with the champion. So for him, it definitely would have been the best, but he was just in this, like, really bad position where the contenders, I don't think through a fault of his own, had kind of exploded around him. And then he has to go almost straight to tribal. He's just come second in an immunity challenge, which he did need to win, so he needed a try. His main opposing force and the other kind of lightning rod who could have got votes is immune. Such a hard position. But I appreciated kind of what he was bringing to it. And I think that a lot of the time his reads and his pitches, and I mean, definitely, I think his move of the season was to split the vote on Hannah. That was a stroke of genius. He had some really big highlights in the game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Sean too. And I think it's interesting to then think back about the fact that, you know, the original contenders only really had to go, they went to tribal what, once?
Yeah.
Right? Together. And I think that just shows that as the champions, you know, and you have to go to tribal after tribal council, you really build super strong bonds. And so when the contenders then were like left out on their own, they all started turning on each other. And that's how we ended up, you know, a 6-6.
I mean,
Ross injury aside, which, you know, RIP in peace. But like, it's just so crazy that those early tribal councils can have such a long term impact in terms of the relationships and the alliances in, you know, now the merge and at the jury stage.
Yeah. And I said this last week, but I honestly think underreported story of how important it's been and the fact that it's been a champion led merge is really because the champions got to decide their numbers. They voted out the people they wouldn't want to work with long term, except Simon, who is really a passive player, if he's there at all. They chose their numbers. And if the contenders had gone to as many tribal councils, possibly, you know, the people who were causing the antagonism, you know, say Sean and Daisy do win out. Sam's, I guess, not there. Andy's probably not there. You know, then they have people that they're more likely to work with, like a Maddie who got taken out by the champion. So they didn't get to decide which six made it to merge. So they imploded much quicker. The champions had a much more cohesive group. I think that's been really a winning formula for them. And they really dominated, you know, that post-swap through a little bit of luck, having the numbers on the one tribe, having Luke and David who were so good and then had idols on the other tribe. So that post-swap of, you know, no champion went home or was voted out. I mean, Ross is his own thing, but was voted out until Dave, from ET until Dave. I mean, that's insane that they dominated that part of the game and now they're dominating the rest of the game. But I mean, look, Sean, I really enjoyed him. The jury villas, I have to say, you guys have to check out the jury villas.
So good.
If you're overseas, don't own 10 play for the Australians. If you're overseas, check out the Australian Survivor Reddit. I think they have them there. So good. And the Dave-Sean relationship is so great. I mean, these two opposing forces who left it all in the game, who are immediately cool with each other, who are playing golf and then make like a little bit of a band, which I loved. Amazing. Obviously, you know, Sean had his low points of the game. He fell for the whole fake idol thing. You know, there was some naivety there. I mean, we definitely saw, you know, with the popcorn reward, I don't, you know, I didn't obviously get a chance to ask him what he was thinking in that because we only had 15 minutes in the exit interview, but something like that, you know, he kind of let people get away from him there. I think he's a little bit too sweet. But I think some really, you know, maybe a learning experience if he were to come back again. I think that he has some really good raw skills for the game. He's obviously also a massive threat, which is going to make it hard for him, but I do think he has the skills.
Well, I mean, the fact that he's like the size of Bigfoot, I think, is really going to be a problem. Like, he just stands out regardless just because he's so giant. But yeah, I just want to go back really briefly. Like, the whole contender versus champion situation, like, voting out the people that they didn't want to work with. I mean, it really gives maybe some credence to the intentional Matt Singh.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you really get to see what this, the long-term ramifications of this, you know, obviously it sucks early, but like the champions are just so strong together. But I totally co-sign all the Jury Villa stuff. Like for those of you who haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Like John's was really funny because like you said, Sean and Dave come together to sing a version of Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond called Sweet Johnny Boy, which was just really, really lovely.
So what plays the ukulele? Very much like, is there anything he can't do? Megan Gale is a lucky woman, I have to say.
Ugh, I'm still baffled that he was a contender. Like, is it because he's not as good, or is it because his wife is more successful than him? I genuinely don't know why he was on the contenders tribe.
Because they had a lot of footballers on the champions tribe is what I would guess. But someone who looks like that and who acts like that and is married to Megan Gale really is not a contender. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's what he was, the most champion of the contenders. Maybe that's why he kind of led the way. I really enjoyed him on the show, and yeah, the Jury Villas are just amazing. Also, long-running segment of John's mum not picking up his call. They get phone calls in the Australian Survivor Jury Villa. I don't like that. As someone who just said I don't like when loved ones are brought to Ponderosa, I'm a heartless person, and you're still a cat, you're still a player in the game. You still have to vote for the winner, even if they're like heavily monitored calls or you're not allowed to talk about the game. I don't think they should be introducing the outside world into Jury Villa. It's something that often happens in International Survivor. I know it's something they had in New Zealand Survivor. Just want to put it out there as an International Survivor person, something I really don't like. Keep these people in the game. They're voting for someone to win $500,000. But I want to kind of move on as well to the Dave Blind side. And let's talk about this, because as we said, now this is the champions taking a shot at their own. And kind of talking about, you know, we talk about the intentional Matt Singh. There is a different world where being heavily in the minority, they're swapped to be on the minority of both tribes and just get picked off. Like, that's the other side of the coin, you know?
Right, true.
We did happen to see it work out really well for them in terms of their own skills, what Luke and David were bringing, and the luck that they had the majority on the other side. And they also took advantage of that luck by throwing a challenge here and there. But, you know, there's a way that goes badly, but it definitely went really well for them. And I now want to talk about this day vote from the perspective of the champions and the contenders, because it ends up being, you know, an 8-2 vote. So everyone's in on the plan except for Luke and David. And I think that it put both sides in a very dicey situation. For me, this was a two-part plan. Taking out Dave is just the first part of the plan. And we were lucky we got to see the next episode because it's two parts. And it's not results-oriented because it's literally, I think, part and parcel of the same thing. You take out David and you've left with a 4-4-1 with Luke in the middle. So I basically feel whoever could nail that second part of securing Luke and stick the landing, this was right for them. But if you couldn't secure that and you were just going to go back to being a minority or go to being a minority for the champions, I do think this was the wrong move. You really needed to secure Luke. So what did you think about this from the champions' perspective?
Yeah, so from the champions' perspective, I mean, you're going to leave Luke out for obvious reasons. He's very close to Dave. I get that. But you have to be so incredibly confident in your relationship with Luke that he's not just going to flip over and go to the other side, because, you know, it's not like you have extra people. You know, it's not like you have a very secure majority here. Like you said, it does end up being a 4-4-1 with Luke in the middle. And so I think that for the champions, I mean, they must have just felt confident that Luke would have gone back on their side. I think from the contender's perspective, even if they didn't feel super confident that they could pull Luke in, I still can understand why they would want to go with this. But then it really behooves them to, you know, to go to Luke, to really work hard on trying to pull him in. You know, it seems like in the next episode, just to skip a little bit ahead, but with Luke and Harry and Baden sort of creating this like bond here with the Operation Nighttime Rice, I thought, oh, this is going to be the opportunity that they pull in Luke, because him being left out of the vote really does put both sides in such a shaky situation, where if one side can capitalize on pulling in Luke, that would be incredibly advantageous, obviously, in a game where the numbers are so tight.
Yeah, and I'm trying not to be results oriented about it, because I do think it's based on the champions had the right read. It really does feel like Luke was with them. And if they had that right read on Luke as a person, that he was going to come back to them, then, you know, kudos to them for A, having the read, and B, pulling it off. I mean, especially Pia, we see really pulling in Luke and using that relationship with him. So obviously extreme credit there. I still think, you know, I think it was a little too early in an ideal world. You know, they are leaving at 4-4-1. There's another world where they take out, you know, another contender and they do it at 9 for sure. But you know, I often criticize people for waiting too long. And I often say this is like a Tony Vlacco thing, but if it's not the perfect time, sometimes it's an okay time. And sometimes you have to make do with an okay time. And it was an okay time. I mean, we're talking about David, who has an idol, who has good reads, who is coming for you at a point, and who could win immunity. So if you don't take the opportunity when you have it, even if it's not perfect, even if it's going to make it dicey, you might miss it completely. And for them to kind of take it at a shaky time, put them in a very shaky position for sure, but then to stick the landing and get Luke, I think they executed it so well. And I think that I can't criticize it for being a little bit too early and leaving them in a shaky position when they made it work. I mean, that is a credit to their game. And, you know, another thing about this that I think is a little contentious is they told all of the contenders, even Daisy, who we know, not a great liar. I mean, these people could have turned on them purposely, which we'll talk about. They could have accidentally screwed it up because you're letting a lot of people into a very delicate blindside of someone with an idol. So if anyone screws it up, I mean, we saw the massive head turn when John's talking about kind of fractures and inroads, you know, and maybe that was all edited because obviously John has just made, you know, quote unquote, made an alliance with Dave at the Kara Award. So maybe those are the inroads he's talking about, but anyone could say anything that could tip David or Luke, two very good players, off. So that's risky.
Well, sorry, going back to the car reward thing from episode 15. Oh my God, how awkward was that? So this is at the reward challenge when Abby wins the car and then goes with David and John to the like picnic basket reward. And they're just eating. David and John are, Abby and John are just eating. And David's like so hard trying to push a final three. It was so uncomfortable. Like, read the room.
Yeah.
John was so not having it. Oh, yeah. God. That was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, and especially with the two people that it was that he was pitching to. I mean, someone pointed out when I put out the Chizzy charts, David's leading the Chizzy charts, so he's been like the most actively strategic person in the game so far, and John and Abby were the only two people still in the game without a point, you know? So that's the disparity of what we're seeing. But again, these people all must have duped Dave for it to work. And, you know, they brought in eight people, the champions, to do this. So let's talk about what the contenders could have done, because the contenders had another option here, which was that they could have worked with David and Luke to take out a more core person to the champions, like a Janine. There's a couple of ways they could have done that. They could have gone back to David and Luke and been like, look, they're doing an 8-2 vote on you, so let's all work together, take out Janine. And then they fractured the group so badly that they'd have, say, like a Pia, Abby, and Simon on one side, Luke and David on the other, and they might be in a swing vote position. Maybe then they vote with desperate Pia, Abby, and Simon the next time to take out David or Luke the next. You know, obviously you're alerting these strong players to the fact that there was a blindside coming, you know, but it's still final 10. You still do have time to take out the huge threats of David and Luke. And I think then there's like a bigger fracture to the champions. They also could have just put their four votes on Janine, not even tried to work with David and Luke. And then it would have been a 4-4-2, you know, Janine, David, and Harry. And Luke's not voting David out, so he would have flipped. Janine wouldn't have got a vote. David wouldn't have got a vote. And it would have been 5-3, and they would have won out.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were, and I get it, because they were throwing this lifeline of David in a desperate situation. I'm sure they were so happy to do that, to take out a huge threat. I see all of that. But knowing that they couldn't secure Luke the next time, knowing how good the champions read was on Luke, that they were going to get Luke back. And we didn't even see this, like, you know, Luke wondering which way he was going to go. We didn't even get that whole episode. I don't know if that content exists, but it does seem like he was going back to the champions. So you're still in the minority. What can you do to shake up the game a little bit more? I think the move for them, I get the desperation, but I think that it's a very different game right now if they go back and they take out Janine. And but at the same time, the champions allow for that by letting them all in on the vote. At first I thought that, but then I thought, actually, really good job by the champions to let them all in on the vote. Because if they let in, say, Baden and Harry, I don't know, choosing two random contenders, and they say, we don't need all eight of you, the six of us, or even the five of us, which would have been enough for the vote, it would have been a 5-3-2. If they say the five of us with Baden, for example, are voting out David, then maybe Baden feels like he's you know, just the one contender in this champion plan, and he doesn't want to do that. Maybe he goes back to the contenders who do their own contender strong plan. But I actually think pretty good job on the champions for bringing in all the contenders. It was risky, but they pulled it off. They brought them all in on this plan where there was four champions and four contenders. It was an even plan. They had equal investment in it. And maybe that made them want to flip less because they were working with these people in a really transparent way. They brought in all of the contenders. They didn't have to screw over any of their former contender allies. And I actually think, again, really good job on the champions for doing that. It was a risky plan all the way through, in every angle, the timing, the numbers, every part of it, getting Luke back the next episode, but they pulled it off to perfection at every level, so I actually really can't be mad at any of that.
Yeah, now talking about it now, thinking about, okay, why tell all of the contenders? You know, I think part of it probably has to do with the fact that, look, if you're going to tell one contender, you're probably going to tell them all. Yeah. Like, I know that they're a disorganized mess, but they're probably going to talk to each other about, you know, what the plan is and what the names are and who's being thrown out there as a target. So you sort of make it, like you said, this even pitch where it's like, look, we're all in this together, yeah. 4-4, teams coming together, we're all going to take out, you know, David, and, you know, because of the how secret we have to be and because of all the acting, you sort of almost get pulled in mm-hmm. to this like big plan. You're so excited to be a part of something. Like, I can see why, you know, that was able to work so well for them. You know, I kind of expected potentially I could have seen Baden gone to Luke and done the thing that you're talking about, where you try to pull in Luke and David and do something a little bit more aggressive to take out potentially one of the three women on the champions or the original champions. But I feel like, yeah, maybe just something of that we're all in this together type attitude yeah. really made everybody like excited about doing this all together. And I have to bring up the Daisy going to Luke, that mystery conversation before tribal. Like, what was that all about?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask if there was something in my teeth, you know, like there was really nothing to yeah. yeah.
And I love that the edit tried to play it off. It's like, oh my gosh, did Daisy go to tell Luke? And of course, you know, logic tells me, no, it's going to be David. David will be going home. But there's this little bit of me. It's like, oh my gosh, she went to tell Luke. Something's going to happen. Harry has a stick in his mouth and that's when he's devious. So maybe something crazy is going to happen. I don't know. But obviously we saw the vote we did. They all stuck together and voted out David.
Yeah. And they have to go across enemy lines to make this vote happen. They need a contender at least to make it work. So as you say, it's like, why not just do all of them and make no one feel left out? Because as you said, if one or two of them know, maybe all four of them know, but then they found out in a different way than through you, then you've broken trust and they have a reason to come for mm-hmm. Janine. But when Janine and Abby and Pia are approaching you and bringing you in and making you part of this huge blindside, the blindside of the season, everyone's pumped up about it, you're focused on that rather than kind of seeing the other parts and still being betrayed by the champions as they bring in only some of the contenders, and then kind of being like, well, maybe we don't need to work with these people who are only partially bringing in contenders into their plans. It became our plans. It became collective, mm-hmm. literally four yeah. and four doing this like merged, you know, joined vote rather than a couple of them. You know, the more I talk about it, the more I like this move from the champions. Because at first I was like, you brought in four people. They had the numbers to flip on you. But even then, even more so, how impressive that they didn't flip on them. They had the numbers mm-hmm. to do it. And through sheer relationships and plans and the way that they approached them and brought them in, they didn't flip on them, even though the contenders would have had the numbers to do it. And I think that underratedly good that, you know, from the champion. And then it took me a couple of days to come around to that perspective. But I actually think that was a really underratedly good move to bring in all the contenders and to have them not yeah. flip on you. Because the next vote, it goes back. They're like, oh, wow. So I guess it's just back to champions and contenders. You know, they realize it was a one-night stand. I don't know if they knew it was a one-night stand for that vote. And they realize now that they're going back to champions strong, and they were just using them. But they didn't get it, you know, at the time. Because if they got it at the time, they had a perfect shot at Janine.
I don't know what you're talking about. The game always resets.
Resets to being champion strong. Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I you know, one thing that I don't know is how the other contenders felt about David, you know, because we've heard a lot about Sean not liking David. And so maybe some of that seeped over into, you know, Daisy and the way that John felt. You know, we see Baden have this close relationship with Luke, but maybe he didn't trust David. And so maybe he felt like, look, let's get David out. None of us like him. We feel like he's playing the snake game. Then Luke becomes a free agent. Maybe this does break the game wide open, and maybe it's not, like you said, just a one night stand. So, you know, I can see the logic from their perspective also of like, look, let's get this guy out and then we'll move forward.
I see the logic, but I think it was based on the wrong read of Luke, which makes it, again,
right.
You know, in the two part plan, they failed in the second part. And David is a huge threat in so many ways. He has an idol. He could win challenges. But in terms of the numbers of the game, he's not that big a threat. It always felt inevitable, like you said, that everyone was going to come together, basically every single person, and vote him out at a point. To me, Janine is a much bigger threat, especially when it's been largely champions versus contenders. She's the Shawn of the champions. You know, she's the spiritual mm-hmm. center. She's at the center of these women and may Lady Simon. We don't know what Simon is doing, but that's a very, very, very strong block. And she, you know, I feel like all the pool balls kind of, you know what I'm talking about? I'm trying to talk about sport, but it kind of like, it all gets broken up the second Janine is taken out of the game. I think she's a bigger threat. I think she has closer allies who aren't going to turn on her in a way Dave didn't have. Dave only had one person that they felt wasn't going to turn on him. You can pretty much take him out at any time. I think this was the time to take a shot at Janine, fracture that whole thing. Then the game would actually reset. Then I think Champions and Contenders is completely broken in a, you know, in a way that it just wasn't for Dave, who everyone could kind of take out. And then they could just go back to the status quo. That would not have been the case, I don't think, if they'd taken out Janine, if, especially if they'd recruited Dave and Luke to do it. Those people aren't joining up in the next vote to take out a contender after that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that that would definitely be the case. I mean, just because Janine is such a strong presence, and such a strong presence at Tribal Council as well, you know, so removing her really can move the pieces around. But I don't know what you're talking about with Simon. You know, obviously, really strong game player here. My favorite part about Simon at Tribal Council is he just like repeats back whatever Jonathan asked him, but just phrased slightly differently. I don't know if that's because
it's
of
a football
his
thing.
Like,
yeah, football
yeah,
press
I think
conference.
So.
Yeah.
Exactly, like post game interview kind of deal. but yeah, I did sometimes note, like I have in my notes here, like Simon speaking at Tribal. I didn't write down what he said because it probably didn't matter, but I did note that he spoke once at this Tribal Council.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Simon. I want to do a eulogy for Dave, obviously, but Simon Purple is... So 10 minutes into that middle episode where they're voting out Dave, I'm watching this conversation between the three champion women, and a man replies, and I'm like, that is a man's voice. And I'm like, who is it? I mean, it must be Luke. Who else could it be? And my fiance was like, Simon? I was like, oh yeah. I forgot that was even an option. He's been edited out of scenes. I think some people caught some other stuff where you kind of see like an erroneous arm kind of everywhere where you shouldn't. He was in that conversation with the champion woman, and for some reason, you can hear his voice, but you can't see his body. He's an actual ghost. This is crazy. He seems like such a nice guy. What did he do to the producers? I honestly don't know. There's a secret scene on Template of him having a moral dilemma, which was admittedly like a really boring moral dilemma where they gave him a pizza cut up into different slices and he had to choose, you know, who got the bigger slices to the smaller slices. And in the most like Simon way, in like the most obvious, predictable, boring way, which was also smart, but also boring, he did, you know, he gave it the bigger slices to people who hadn't had rewards lately. So I kind of get why that was left to a secret scene. But the poor guy, that's been like his one thing to do. And it wasn't even in the episodes. The episodes are 75 minutes long. 75 minutes! And there was no time for Simon Purple. It's actually hard because it's final eight. Everyone's important. And we know so much about every other person. And I feel like he's just like this one blind item. And we'll talk about Luke later. But I feel like so much of everyone's path, including someone like Luke, is down to Simon. We don't know what he's thinking because he's literally a ghost on the show. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, I also heard this theory that he'd done something to piss off production. That's why he's
so
being
nice,
like
though.
Edited out somehow. Yeah, I don't really understand. I don't know. Maybe his but he was just too boring. I'm not quite sure exactly what he did. But yeah, the fact that his secret scene got edited out, which again, to go to Baden's like sort of summary things that he's been doing on Reddit, like they assumed that it would have been part of the episode because you're going to do something like this. You're going to have this moral dilemma. Of course you're going to put it, although like, given the fact that it was Simon and the actual moral dilemma itself was pretty stupid, like, that's fine. I'm fine with it being edited out. But there were like some other shady things. Like, I think it was during maybe the episode 17 when I can't remember who was talking, but it was like, yeah, one of them's playing for fifth, shot of Simon. Like, they cut quickly to Simon. Like, oh, okay. And then there was something else, even the champions, I have this in my notes somewhere, but I can't find it. It was like when they were talking about who they're going to work with. They listed, it was like Luke talking to Pierre or something. Yeah. I was like, yeah, so we've got, you know, you, me, Janine, Abs, and then whoever else we can pull in. Like, Simon wasn't even part of the conversation, which is just incredibly insane because he seems like somebody who is just so incredibly nice and would be loyal and never flip. So I don't quite get that.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation where they edited him out and you can hear his voice. I mean, I had to rewind and I'm like putting it louder. I'm like, that is definitely a man talking unless one of these women has a cold or something. But like, no, it was definitely Simon. And it made no sense because they're talking about the David boot, which Simon is a part of. So it's not even like eventually they leave Simon out of the boot and it would be too hard to explain the intricacies of why. So for storytelling purposes, they have to edit out Simon. Like, he was part, like, it changes nothing to have Simon there just kind of nodding along. But they went out of their way to edit him. That seems like a difficult thing to do. This is a mystery. This is like an actual mystery to me. The Simon mystery.
Yeah, I don't know what he did. Maybe his like the little plate with his family on it. I don't know. Maybe he like I don't know. I was gonna say maybe he broke it, but then I think John burnt his when they got that reward earlier in the season. So it's not like he did something disrespectful. I genuinely don't know. Like this is Rob on Renap with Rob and Akiva Nita podcast. They do Conspirapod where they talk about conspiracy theories. I would happily love to hear them talk about why Simon is not on the show. What did he do in this situation?
Yeah, cue the serial music. Why is yes. Simon not on the show? Like, you have to imagine. Are you hearing it in your head? You're like, what did he do to producers to edit him out of scenes? Why is he purple? This is the next season of Serial that I want to watch. Why was Simon edited out of the show in such drastic fashion? Crazy. But to go to the other side of the purple coin, to someone who was not purple, I want to eulogize Dave. Dave, who got 105 confessionals. And at the time that he left, Simon had 5 confessionals. 100 more. 100 more confessionals than someone who's been on the show for as long as him. I can't. Serial, get
That's
on
insane.
It. That's what we're watching. That's what we're watching.
5 to 105?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I know Benji had a similar thing with Monica last season where he was like, I think it was 99-6. Somehow this is like a bigger discrepancy than that. Literally insane. I want to read out the Dave stats. Okay, as I said, 105 confessionals. He came 10th, but we still did get 16 extra long episodes of him, more than a US Survivor season. So that's a good part of the Australian formatting that we got so much Dave, even though he, you know, barely made the jury. 11 tribal councils. He found 2 idols. You know, to talk about what he achieved in the game, the popcorn reward, one of my favorite scenes of all time, 2 major and impossible tribe flips from a swap, also from the Sporty 7 who knew each other beforehand, incredible stuff. The fake idol swap was just amazing TV. I think that kind of started off being like, oh, this guy's not just a model, this guy's a crazy person. And then we got to watch that unfold for so many episodes in this amazing Sean versus David dichotomy. Obviously, his duo with Luke was incredible. I honestly think they're 2 of the best casting decisions in Australian Survivor history, if not the 2 best. Like, I'm genuinely willing to say that. And yeah, I honestly think he has had one of the most entertaining stories in Survivor history in any iteration. I mean, the amount that he achieved in 16 episodes, what we watched, I think it's one of the most entertaining games I've ever watched.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you talked about this with Rob, but the fact that you can have Dave, who is such a strong presence on the show, next to Luke, of all people. Like, Luke, this is Luke we're talking about here. And yet Dave is the one who was just really standing out for me, throughout the season as being such a strong character. I mean, that was crazy, absolutely insane. And to go back to our preseason podcast, he was one of the ones who is not announced. So,
yeah, they were like, you'll have time. You'll get it. Believe me, you'll get it.
which is hilarious because when the actual cast got released and it was like, oh, top model, you know, David, I was like, oh, meh, like we're probably not going to see much from him. They didn't include him as part of the preseason stuff. And then the fact that the other person that we didn't know about, Anastasia, was the first boot. And I was like, oh, Dave, like he won't be long. And then he turns into such a fascinating character to watch, such an interesting game player. And the fact that he was with us for this long is pretty amazing, and I'm happy about it for sure.
Yeah, and then to talk about him like as a player, the fact that he got blindsided here with an idol is really not that surprising for me. As I said, literally the same placement as Henry, similar player to Henry. It's not a coincidence that these types of players get blindsided with idols. They are risk-taking players, arrogant players. I'm talking about your Henrys, Benji, Matt. There have been a lot of people in Australian Survivor alone, you know, Russell, another one, who have been blindsided with idols in their pocket or around their neck in Russell's case. You know, even going back to an Aussie in Micronesia, way back from that, we've understood that these alpha type players who think they are untouchable are prime blindside with an idol material. And, you know, it's a lot of that arrogance that makes them so fun to watch, that makes so many of their big moves great, is a double-edged sword, because it's also that confidence that will bite you. Paranoia is a good thing. I think Cochran's talked about that. Sometimes it's good to be paranoid. You want to really, you want the right amount of paranoia, not too much, but enough that makes you kind of think, yeah, I need to play my idol right now. And kind of the things that he was saying in this episode, he was like, Luke has immunity, so he can't go home, and I have immunity, so I can't go home. It's like, that's actually not how it works. Those two things are not the same. People often do go home with immunity. So it was that, you know, it was obviously the confessionals of him saying, I'm in the best position ever. I didn't feel great for him. But the main thing I didn't like was how he kept saying, like, I can't go home because I have immunity. And I'm like, no, you're in the perfect spot to go home with immunity. You are Henry. You are Matt. You are Benji. You are all of these players who go home in this capacity at a similar time, literally all around like 8 to 11-ish is like a broad group. We've seen it time and time again. It's the exact type of player who will completely suffer for the skills in the game, the arrogance in the game, the confidence in the game that gives them all the good stuff that they bring to the game, but also is their fatal flaw.
And we, the viewers, are better for it. I mean, yeah. Give me some arrogant players. They're so much fun to watch. And I mean, the fact that he was not only crazy and out there, seemed to have a really good sense of humor. You know, I think he was a villain that I was excited to root for. And so I was very happy that he was on our screen for so long. But credit where credit is due to all of the other players around him, you know, that eight that was able to keep it together, keep it a secret, you know, Daisy and her terrible acting, you know, like I think they should deserve credit. And I think it was Dave said in maybe a jury villa or somewhere about how, you know, Pia and them were being extra nice to him. So maybe he should have seen something coming. Which the Pia scene where she was talking about fake laughing, then cut to her fake laughing to David. Really, really great. So, you know, I think some of the credit has to go to them for keeping this secret on lock until Tribal Council.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't as smooth as he thought he was. I mean, he's winning the chizzy, and I think a lot of that is deserved. He did a lot of great things in the game. He completely innovated the game, and he had some extreme lows. And I think that his approach as well to the way he was kind of approaching people with plans has been putting people off since the pre-swap, you know, and that's not a good thing. So I do think that those are the lows that we see. And we've been saying for so long, like, these women know what's up with David. They have been onto him from the beginning. That's why when they were like, we need to tell Sean so he can get taken out on the other side, I'm like, why? You will get to it. David's not getting one over on you. It always felt completely, if it felt predictable that the woman would get one over on him eventually, and they had the time to do it and they took their shot, and they didn't need to do it any earlier than this because they were always going to do it. They always had his number. So, you know, obviously complete credit to them as well. And, you know, high highs and low lows for David. That's what made it, I've said, one of the most entertaining seasons I've watched. Certainly at the moment, I'm absolutely loving it. And he was such a big part of that. I think the cheesy points are deserved, but I also think the fact that he went out in this like iconic blindside, completely iconic with an idol, it was the perfect flame out ending for someone who's been like the complete flame out character from episode one, just like running at 100 miles an hour. Sorry for saying miles. I think because I'm on the podcast with you is why I said miles instead of kilometers. But I think that he's been so fast paced from the word go. And he said it himself. A blindside is the most humane way to put someone down. It's a credit to how big a threat he was. And it's also just like the huge aggressive play that his huge aggressive game completely deserved in ending it.
And he says that, unfortunately, I go out like a Brooklyn hipster, which is such a great, iconic ending line. So even he gives us those little nuggets, even in his final words.
And again, if you miss him, Jury Villa has a lot of him. May I say a hashtag John's butt, but it's not John. There's a lot there. It's not just for that reason. I mean, anyway, it's a good video.
Dave has a really funny line when so he's like watching Sean run, and Dave says something about like, well, that's why they call him the horse, although Ross may have seen him in the nude. Which really made me laugh. He's just such an entertaining character. I don't know, like, how did they come across this man?
I know. How is this like a person that exists in the world? He deserves to be on TV. Right? He needs to be on TV.
No idea. Also, the fact that he takes all the criticism in stride, him reading, like, there's some videos out there of him reading negative comments or criticisms about him. Like, really hilarious. I'm really happy but he was on this season.
Yeah. And, you know, David and Luke, or David and Sean for The Amazing Race. David and Luke would be unbelievable. That would be. Oh, and now so The Amazing funny. Race is coming back to Australia. I need to see that. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, the next episode when Dave is unfortunately gone. And a really big plot point here is Daisy and the idol. Which was really a mess from start to finish, just a whole mess. I mean, just from when she found this one, she said she found two idols. She was given the first one. She found this one fair and square. Well done to her there. Definitely with women and finding idols, it's great to see her, you know, when there's a whole idol hunt. And also bad on Luke for saying he thought David had an idol, because that triggered this idol hunt. A couple people are looking and Daisy pulls it out, which is great. That's where the good stuff ends. Because firstly, so she goes and opens it at the well, which is like maybe the worst, like unless instead of just going to the middle of camp, which would be the worst place to go to open it, she goes to like the primary meeting spot, the second probably worst place to open it. And then the rare double Lady Bulge purse sighting, the rare double. She makes another Lady Bulge purse. We did have some comments on Twitter asking if Daisy's Lady Bulge purse is her John's butt. And what world have I created where that is a sentence that makes contextual sense, but it does? I mean, Daisy, throw it into the bush. Anything else except the Lady Bulge purse. Never the Lady Bulge purse. If anyone goes to play Survivor in the future, and if I can impart one word of wisdom to you, if you're standing with an idol and you're thinking, what do I do with this? People are walking up. Don't make it into a Lady Bulge purse. This is not a good thing. It was also hanging out of the clothes. She's also done it once before. No more of this.
so awkward. So here's what I was confused about. Is it the idol was at the well, or because I was trying to tell, it was like in the rocks and they looked like the rocks that were around the well.
I think it was right near the well.
Okay, so yeah. So, but then she kind of goes, like, I was really unclear what her plan was. So she's going to open it up at the place that people go all the time and then do what with it? Like, it was almost like you could sort of see the wheels turning of her trying to figure out what she's supposed to do in this instance, even before Luke and Pia walk up to catch her. You know, she's just like, she's trying to figure out what to do with it. And instead of like going off somewhere far in the jungle to figure out where to stash it, no, she does it, like you said, right in front of the well, which makes no sense. And then, oh my goodness, the absolute. The look on Luke's face when it clicks, he's like, oh, she's got an idol. And he just straight up asks her. I mean, that was TV gold.
Like, isn't it right in your hand?
Yeah. Like, are you not holding it right there? And, you know, she tried to like play it off of like, I'm washing myself, which then she could have been like, yeah, sorry, guys. Can you come back? Like, I was going to wash, right? Like, get them to go away or something. Or like you said, toss it. Because it didn't that what Luke was going to spy with, right? Like, wasn't that going to be a spy shack? He was going to like hide behind those rocks. Like, toss it, do something. Oh my god, so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Look, it's unfortunate that the clothes that women wear on the show end up being maybe a little bit skimpier, just like the way the fashion works. Like, men are kind of in these like more like maybe cargo pants, whatever, with pockets. She didn't have any pockets. She was in this like really skin tight outfit. But I also think there's a point that like speaks to how much you're thinking about the game. David said in some of his postseason coverage on the 10Play website that he had like brought those like low hanging yoga pants because they were his idol hiding pants. Like, he literally thought about that to put that, you know, in his pocket. And I know that someone like Dom Abate has, you know, he made like a little part of his bag where he could stash the idol. Like, that's just thinking about it on another level. I did think at the time, you know, when Daisy went to the reward where she was given an idol, you know, you have to think she obviously didn't, as we know by the structure of the way that she approached that reward where she ate and bathed and called, you know, every loved one before she actually realized there was an idol. But you have to think, if I'm getting something, maybe I should wear my like most covered thing so I could bring something back with me without being too obvious. So I think there is, you know, in terms of the fashion choices, maybe that's why Dave had so many of these materials where he could stash idols. But in terms of the fashion idol, the fashion choices, I do think that there is a component where people who are really thinking about the game will make it work, you know, easier for men. But if you're thinking about it across any gender, there are ways you would think about it to maybe make it work with idols, which Davey, you know, didn't do. She was wearing this really difficult outfit. But I do think anything would have been better. Like, definitely you don't need to go and read it immediately. throw it in a bush or stuff it down your very, very tight pants with your top over it and just run, like just walk somewhere else and go read it in private. I can't believe she went to the well. The well! That's where everyone is all the time.
I mean, that's why I was trying to give her credit. Like, maybe at least it was close to the well.
But you don't have to open it. Just take it and go. Like, or, she went and opened it.
Get further behind that rock too. We've seen Luke go back there. We know that you can be back there. This was very much giving me like Sharn's poop idol type thing vibes. I'm pretty sure that was her, right? That found the idol in the challenge and then it promptly fell out of her pants. So maybe that's what happens when your clothes are too loose.
It's a double-edged sword.
But just the TV gold of Luke straight up asking her if she has an idol, like that was really wonderful.
I just can't believe we got the Lady Bulge purse again. I mean, I can't believe that we got it twice, you know? That's something we shouldn't see even one time. But so okay, that was bad. We've gone on at length about that. But the original instinct of the champions was to vote for Daisy. So imagine how good a secret idol would have been. But now that plan has blown up. She now has a public idol. She wants to use it for Contender Strong. And then, you know, the champions are obviously going to have to work out then who to put their votes on. And I put this on Twitter, but I want to give my idol wearing formula. If you're wearing an idol, it's a very easy formula. If your opponents have the numbers to split the vote, you got to play it on yourself. This seems obvious, but Russell Hans did not. So I had to make up the principle for Russell. And if they don't have the numbers to split the vote, 100% play it on someone else, because it has never happened in Survivor history. And 100% is high. 99.95% play it on someone else, because it's never happened in Survivor history that a group without the numbers to split has voted for someone wearing an idol when they had other good non-immune options on the other side for them. I mean, for the three amigos, that's the one thing where they were wearing idols and then the other side voted for them. But they were all immune, so there was nothing they could do. They knew Philip was going to go, and they were all kind of like, oh, well, goodbye, Philip. But if there are other options, of course the other side are not going to vote for you. That's why you wear the idol. That's the whole point. By doing that ballsy play, you have implicit immunity. That's the whole point. Otherwise, why wear it? Like, that's the entire point. You make yourself immune by wearing it, and then you have a 1 in 3 shot of everyone else. Because human nature, the other side aren't going to vote for you if they wear the idol. Why would they do that? They have a 66% shot with the other three not even taking you into account. That's pretty good odds. So they're going to go for that. They're going to try their luck at that. Especially with someone like Daisy, who has already played an idol on herself when she didn't need to. So in the predictable play, they know there's a very, very, very good chance that she's going to play it on herself. Why would they do that? And even if she doesn't play it on herself, they have a 66% chance if they're just looking at the boys, which you don't need to because Daisy's obviously an option as well. So to wear it and then to play it on herself, you can say, look, she's still in the game, which is true. Of course she's still in the game. And if you want to say, hey, you've made the most conservative possible play to still remain in this game, you're 100% going back to camp, then fine, she's still in the game. But she kept saying you got to risk it to get the biscuit, but she did not risk it. And she has no biscuits. She has no numbers. She, you know, in a different world, another plan, say, okay, I'm going to be implicitly immune. I'm going to wear the idol. And we just saw this in Survivor South Africa. I'm not going to play it. Then at least you have an idol. But she said she used the idol. She has no idol left even to protect herself. She's lost the numbers. The formula works. There is no reason to wear an idol and then play it on yourself. She completely fell into that trap in this regard.
I'm pretty sure in that big ass box that she got with all those foods, so there were some biscuits in there somewhere. So
she's biscuitless. She has no biscuits. That's how it works.
Maybe at one point in time she did have some biscuits before she misplayed two idols. Given the fact, like, that mystery box, I love her saying, like, I found two idols. It was like, okay, you lifted up a small box inside your bigger box to reveal an idol that you won when you were by yourself.
Like, and let's be honest.
All right. Found.
Were the producers saying, hey, Daisy, there's one thing you haven't looked at in this box. You've done everything. You've been here for hours. Look in the box. Like, I think there's a very good chance that maybe it needed some nudging. I don't know, but it took her a long time to find even that small idol. Maybe that's why she's saying find, because that was like a search for her. She had to make her way through the food and then get to the idol.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know if that's because there was so much food in there or that little box was like real confusing. She didn't even have to open a thing. Like, you just lifted it up. It was there. Well, anyway, whatever. I completely agree with you. Not for this to be too much of just a sounding board, but I think the fact that you are going to try to, I'm not quite sure exactly what her logic was. You know, props to Janine for really playing those mind games with Daisy about
here,
like,
as well. Yeah.
Empia, yeah, exactly. Like you, you know, but you could still be here. And if you are still in the game, you still have a shot. I really wish that some of the other contenders had pushed a little bit more. I mean, I think you see Harry saying like, well, I think they're going to put the votes on John.
Yeah.
And so he obviously, you know, results oriented, but had the correct read here. And so sort of pushing a little bit more instead of really leaving it all up to Daisy, because Daisy, love her, maybe, but she's a little bit of a mess. jury's still out. But yeah, I just, oh man, that was painful. This is just a whole episode was painful for Daisy.
Yeah. I mean, you don't quote Wes Nail and talk about the biscuits and then do the most conservative play. People are like, well, she's still in the game. Of course that is true. But I mean, all logic points to the fact that they're not going to vote for you. So then just save your idol, get one, save the idol or try and get the numbers or have a 1 in 3 shot of getting the numbers. It's the most conservative thing she could have done. And I think it was based on the wrong read. As I've said, never in Survivor history, never, ever. It's been how many seasons? I don't even know how many seasons of international English speaking Survivor that I have watched. They're never going to do it. It speaks to human nature. They're not going to vote for you when you're wearing an idol, and there are other good options. It's something I criticized Joe Mena for at the time. I'm pretty sure he came at me on Twitter about it, but in the Heroes, Healers, Hustlers merge tribe, he did the same thing, and they're just not going to vote for you. It doesn't behoove them to do that. You know, what are they getting out of risking that and putting it on you? I mean, I guess you could say, like, the double bluff, because she's wearing it, she's not going to play it on herself, so she's, like, double bluffing them. I don't really know, but the thing is, they have a good shot just by going for the guys. They have the majority shot. They have a 66% chance. If you take Daisy completely out of the equation, it just makes sense that they're going to do that. And I love that Harry did predict the John vote, because it's like, look, we're not going to do Daisy or Harry. That's too obvious. Baden's too non-obvious, so we're going to go to the middle vote of John, which is the least obvious. But because that's so non-obvious, it then becomes obvious. It's like a weird thing, but I completely credit Harry there for picking that up. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the Princess Bride type situation where it's like, well, if they do this, then I do this. But then they'd know that they would do that. So then I would do, you know, and it just sort of goes like back and forth.
They
and
don't
forth.
Know that we know they know we know. That's where we're at with the whole. Yeah. It's a game of chicken for sure. But I definitely think it should be a game of chicken of which of the three guys are they going to put it on? And Daisy should be out of the equation. It's implicit immunity. Yeah. You've won yourself that right of immunity. Just by wearing it, you've won yourself implicit immunity and you get the shot on someone else. That's the beauty of the move. Otherwise, the move is meaningless. Why even wear your idol? Just take it out and play it. Completely meaningless move.
Yeah. I'm also thinking now about the fact that, you know, Daisy said, I want to use this to take on one of the champions, you know, we're going in contender strong, but really those four contenders didn't really work all that well together. I mean, you know, and again, I don't know if this is again, consequence of the fact that they did not necessarily choose each other. They were chosen for each other. So you have Harry, Baden, John and Daisy all together. They just really, man, they really didn't gel. Like, if they worked as a team for Boost Juice, Janine would be so upset with them. They do not work efficiently together as a team because, you know, you can expect like Harry's giving the right reads. Baden, you know, does go into talk to Luke, but maybe if they really were four strong, he would try to get more information out of Luke instead of just giving Luke information. Like there was really no team effort here, even though some of the language that was being used was, oh, we're contenders we're contender strong. But they just, man, they were all over the board and really didn't work together. And that's why it seemed to be like Daisy's sole decision, even though it seemed like it really should have been more of a team discussion. It really did seem like Daisy was just like out on an island by herself making the incorrect reads.
Yeah. And if that's the way she feels and if she doesn't feel like it's contender strong, then the move is to keep your immunity idle and to secure yourself implicit immunity here. But she's copped a lot of flack for wanting to be contender strong now, when I think a lot of people kind of credit the implosion of the contenders to her, obviously taking out Sam at the swap, which kind of started the ball rolling and it never really stopped. It still hasn't stopped, even though you've lost like a Ross and a Dave along the way. She obviously takes out Sam. She's a big part of the reason they don't work together at the merge to keep Andy either with her idol or maybe, you know, going 6 strong with the vote. But it's like, I understand all those moves in isolation. I think I even gave her a chizzy point for the Sam move. You know, she was scared about the short-term plans. you know, if they do take out David and Luke, then she felt she was kind of on the bottom of those contender numbers and she might get taken out before the merge. With Andy, he had voted for her and tried to take her out, so she didn't really, she said, I don't want Andy to be here. She didn't trust him to work with him. I understand those moves in isolation, but I guess when I come down to it, like, what is her role to play in the implosion of the contenders that she's now kind of trying to get together? I guess the fact that she had such bad relationships with Sam to begin with, or the fact that she couldn't work with Andy so well to begin with, like, it comes down to those really fractured relationships. And I think that if I were to say her part in this is that she got to a swap, and it might be Sam's fault and it might be hers fault, but, you know, two to tango. So her, whatever her part was of having such a negative relationship with Sam that she felt that she immediately needed to take her out at a swap before taking out a Dave or a Luke, that is what started the extreme fracture of the contenders. And you often see it in Survivor history, you know, for them to take out an Andy and a Shaw on the champions, for example, and then go for Dave, then they're, you know, on the front foot, then they can kind of make it work. But we often see it mostly at a merge, but I'm talking at a swap here, when, for example, they take out Eric Cardona in Samoa first, when Galu do that before turning on Foa Foa. Mm-hmm. You don't want to take out one of your own first. You want to get the ball kind of rolling, kind of start the precedent. You're taking out champions and then kind of settle your differences, you know, take out, you know, throughout, like they, exactly like they did with David. But to go for Sam mm-hmm. first is what I think completely fractured the contenders, and they've never recovered from it. And for her to now want to get the contender numbers together, it's not going to work. Like the contenders are now playing a champions game.
Yeah. And look, I've never played Survivor. I don't claim to know how to play, but I can imagine that if thank you, Shane. Okay, good. That makes one of us. I can imagine that if you're in there, it can be very hard to have a longer term view of the game, you know, because you are trying to get from vote to vote. You're trying to think of, okay, this person is targeting me. This person doesn't like me. Of course, you're going to want to take them out. But I think there needs to be a little bit more of a broad look at the season and how things might play if a particular move is made, right? Think about the longer term ramifications, even if it's just a couple votes down the line, of what a particular event or vote out might mean in the longer term. And so I think similarly to, you know, what I said about Sean not really seeming to have, at least what we saw, a bigger picture, you know, Daisy is sort of similar in that same boat. And maybe that's just because she was sort of Sean's right hand woman, sort of following him around doing what he wanted. You know, I don't know how intertwined their two strategies were, but it does seem very much vote to vote to vote. Which, when you look in isolation, they can look like good moves. But when you look at the season as a whole and you look at the big picture of the trajectory that ended up occurring because of that particular move early on, you know, you can say like, yikes, maybe that wasn't such a great idea. And so I think that that's something interesting to think about when you're talking about these people's games.
Yeah, she did a large part of handing the game to the champions by taking out, you know, the people that she did in the pre-swap, mostly Sam and then a Sarah, and kind of doing that. And at the time we said, look, you know, maybe she needs to do that because she's not in a good spot with the contender. So she needs to do that. But now looking in hindsight, it's like, look, if your best case scenario is handing the game to the other tribe because you're in such a bad position with your original tribe, that's a problem. You know, that you can't just say, well, that was her best bet. Like, that's a bad best bet. Your best bet should be better than that. So I think that's a problem. And it really does speak to the fact of, you know, talk again about the intentional Matt thing, which this really wasn't. This was a swap, so it was luck. But coming in with two numbers, Luke and David, you kind of feel like, okay, maybe we will get rid of a Sam. You know, it was the exact same thing with Galu when they took out Eric Cardona. They were like, there are just four Foa Foas. It's fine. Like, we'll get them at a point. If they'd come in with more numbers, if they'd come in with, you know, three or four champions, they might have been like, we better take out a David or a Luke first. I know they had idols, but we better take out a strong champion first and then turn on each other. And I think that would have been a lot better for their game. But because it seemed so non-threatening that they'd lost so many challenges and they were so down in the numbers, they got to this, like, arrogant position, I think, the contenders in the swap, where they were completely winning the game. They'd only been to one tribal council, so they kind of felt like they could take out their own, but they really shouldn't have done that at first, because I think it's just been, we lost so many contenders in a row, it's crazy. We've lost all contenders in the votes except Dave from ET, which is crazy. So I think that is her part to play there.
What was the phrase at the beginning of the season that was like retribution? Like the contenders are going to get retribution on the champions.
They didn't. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Or like if you end the season, you know, like before the first swap, then it definitely feels that way.
2 weeks into the game, for sure. But it's all been downhill from there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I want to also talk about something else they could have done. It's a little bit in the weeds, but whatever. We're an hour and 15 minutes into the Survivor podcast. So let's do it. The contenders are putting four votes on to Abby.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And look, You're either going to win with the idol or you aren't. So let's look at that. Let's say if Daisy plays the idol wrong, you've lost. That's happened. It's a binary thing. If she's played the idol right, you've won. But if she's played the idol right, there's no point piling four votes onto a champion. I think what would have been really fun, because here's the thing, Harry loves Nick Wilson, right? Let's pay tribute to Nick Wilson more than just a stick. Let's do the amazing, brilliant, innovative minority vote split, which Nick made in the Dan vote of David versus Goliath. If they put two votes on Abby, for example, and two votes on Janine, there's a couple of things. One, like what Nick did, you're protecting against a champion idol, so that if because obviously we'll talk about Baden, but he goes back and tells him the votes on Abby. So if someone plays an idol for Abby, or if Abby has an idol, then you re-vote, it's zero votes, you know, across the board, and then the champions win again with their majority. So if you do 2-2, you protected an idol, you know, the other person will go home. And also, that would have been really, really fun. If they had won with the idol, I mean, they would have looked stupid to the viewer, you know, going at a 5-2-2. The casuals definitely would have been like, what idiots? But we on this podcast, an hour and 17 minutes in, would have been like, it makes sense, because then it's a tie between, say, Abby and Janine, and the champions are forced to vote one of their own and make that decision. And that's an actual fracture that you can take back for the next part of the game. So I think that would have been cool. Just because Harry keeps talking about Nick Wilson, I'm like, well, then do the cool move. This is like the perfect spot for it. They would have lost. They would have looked dumb because Daisy didn't play her idol right, and it would have been a 5-2-2, and Facebook would have been going crazy about it, but I think that would have been the best move.
Yeah, I agree. Although the fact that we're also sitting here talking about the fact that, you know, Daisy didn't think, or even the other contenders didn't think, to maybe push a little harder on who the idol should have been played for.
Yeah, but this is where I think, this is Harry. If I'm thinking anyone should do it, just because right. Harry seems like the trickster and he loves Nick Wilson, this is what I would be expecting from him. But yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting it from Daisy. Like, I just want Daisy to not open her idol at the well. Those are my expectations for Daisy.
I mean, I guess maybe if you're talking about a team that really doesn't perform very well as a team, like, they can't coordinate multiple people to vote for. Like, that's just too complicated. They can't do two men on, you know, Abby, two women on Janine, because, you know, there's three. Yeah, exactly. But, so, like, that's too complicated.
Well, you don't have to go across gender lines. I mean...
Well, no, I'm just talking about like easy ways to split the vote that would make sense. Like it's too complicated. It's too complicated.
We just watched one of the biggest, like, you know, we just watched a minority completely overrun a majority through multiple cool strategic moves with idols. And I'm talking about the Davids and David versus Goliath. And I'm just saying that this week, between the David vote and then this vote, the Davids would have made it work somehow. I'm telling you, they would have played the idol correctly. They would have split the vote. They would have been doing some cool things. I'm just saying that's the difference between the contenders and the Davids, because the Davids are coming out of this week with a win. I can assure you of that.
Well, that's why it's not David versus Goliath, right? So, you can't say they're playing like a bunch of Davids.
Yeah, that's why they don't get superhero t-shirts made for them like Eric Reichenbach has done for the Davids. I'm just saying, they would have made it work. But, you know, another thing that they're dealing with is Baden, who is kind of spilling all the secrets to Luke, including the fact that the vote's going to be on Abby, including the fact that they're maybe playing the idol on Daisy or Harry, which, again, you know, specify their numbers more to play it on John, and also could have really been Baden in the butt if they had voted for Baden, because then Baden and John become the two major options. So for Baden, I kind of see it from a long-term perspective of building those relationships, but in the short term, he could have voted himself out by doing this.
Oh my god, that would have been absolutely insane if we had seen that.
Just a mess from the contenders in this episode, the anti-David in this episode.
Yeah, just all a mess. But I think, I think we have to talk about the fact that we saw the 4-4-1 situation. So,
questions about this.
Yeah. So we talk about it during the questions, talk about it now, because I was very confused about this situation.
I'm confused as well.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Because I watched Luke's voting confessional. He puts a vote on Harry. There's no reason to do this. I mean, if, Abby plays an idol, then they'll just go and re-vote and they'll win anyway. So there's no reason. I mean, Edward Morris did bring to my attention like an hour ago that this is something Luke kind of did in the first tribal council he went to, where he kind of, you know, put a vote, to tie the vote between Joan and Kent, when instead of it being 7-5, it became 6-6. I mean, Luke's going to Luke. I think that at a point where my strategic brain is just kind of exploding and I don't understand why, I just have to put it down to Luke's going to Luke for reasons I don't understand. He says in his voting confessional, he's like, then it'll be 4-4-1. It's like, it will be. That is right. But why?
Very good.
Why will it be 4-4-1? What is the purpose of that? I still don't understand.
Yeah, well, he can count, so that's like that's a good thing. I don't know, maybe it's the little bit of the shock of the David blindside. He got confused or something, because at first I was like, is he trying to stick it to the contender or the champions, like, somehow, or was this actually strategic for some reason? But then when you start to think about, like, if idols are played and how the votes would shake out, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't get it. I don't know. So yeah, maybe we'll just have to chalk it up to Luke being Luke and move on, because I can't explain this.
Especially when Luke is in a somewhat vulnerable position. Like, he is the swing vote, but, like, you just got left out of the vote, so let's vote very cohesively. Like, if you're going with the champions, be with the champions. You know, do what you said you were going to do. Be a really trustworthy vote. Let's become a unit again if you've made that choice. But I'm interested of what you think about that choice, because he obviously is in this 4-4-1 position in this episode. He can go with the champions, which he does, all the contenders. So what did you think about him going with the champions?
Yeah, so I mean, this is hard without being out there and being able to know, like, truly what the relationships are, because we see Luke talk about his strong relationship with Janine, we see Pia talk about her strong relationship with Luke. So it seems that, like, at least two of the women have really talked about how, you know, they love Luke, they love Luke. So clearly, I mean, he's a good game player. So I have to imagine that he somehow can see a path to the end with the women, I guess, because if you're talking about, you know, you want to break up those three, like, now is the time to do it. Flip over, go to the contenders and take out Abby, you know, even if Abby is the one that you have the least relationship with, you know, then at least you fractured the three, because those three women are so incredibly strong. I just can't see them flipping on one another. So I get Luke from the self-preservationist side of, like, look, I'm going to go with the people that I've worked with for so long, that I've been loyal with for so long. Have you seen these contenders out here? They're, like, finding idols and showing us and just being complete disasters. They're all, like, on the, you know, the wrong page. Like, do I really want to work with them? So I have to imagine there was logic there that, you know, that makes sense. Like, maybe it was the fact that he had such close relationships with the champions, or because the contenders were such a hot mess. Maybe he thinks that, look, Baden is going to be that person that he can pull in and then flip with later. Like, you know, I'm not entirely sure exactly what he's thinking. I can see it from both perspectives. It's just really hard to know. Like, I don't mean to be a fancy fencerton about this, but you know, it just seems like I could see either way working out, and I have to trust Luke, but oh man, it's hard.
Yeah, I definitely see both perspectives. And a part of me is like, Janine is the key to his whole game. She loves him. Janine, can she win? She's a multi-millionaire. Janine, you may as well just take Luke to the end and give him the money. You know, you're going to get as far as you possibly can, maybe at 2, if the jury aren't going to award you the money because you're so rich. So maybe just take Luke to the end, you know? But I guess she's not thinking like that, which is correct. I do think there's a lot of power in the relationships that he's built with the champions. I just worry so much, like you, about those champion women. They're so strong. And so much of this comes down to Simon, because it's like, are they 3 of 8 or are they 4 of 8? I don't know, because Simon's integral to that. And he's not on the show. Cue the serial music. Yeah, I mean, that's my main issue with it. I'm on the fence a bit like you, but in coming down on a decision, I think he should have gone with the contenders, just because now he's at 8 with those strong block of 4 champions, I guess, if Simon is with them. And that's the issue for me. If he can take out one of them next, he's in a good spot. He really does need to take out one of those women pretty soon. And I do think that, you know, Baden is key to that. It kind of dawned on me that the last episode that I watched was the first episode I've ever watched of Luke in many, many, many episodes without him having a partner in crime. He's always had Jericho. He's always had David, and he needs his new partner in crime. He needs Baden. He can't do it alone. It's very, very hard to flip alone. I mean, look at all the great flippers in Survivor history. Rob had Mateo, you know, Rob Cesarino had Mateo, Tony had Wu, you know, that's the way to do it. And I do think that Luke needs a fluid game, because if it stays stagnant for too long, they're coming after him just like they did with David. 2 votes on the contenders, and then it was time to strike. He's such a huge threat that a fast-paced, fluid game that he can kind of keep up with is what will work really well with him. And I know it's so easy to say, look, just swing from side to side, like the pendulum. You know, everyone always says that about everything, and it must be the hardest thing to do. It's such a difficult strategy. I have to think if anyone can pull it off, it's someone with the relationships that Luke does. So I think partnering with Baden to do that would be best. And I think the first shot probably should have been at the women now.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, you see him at the beginning of the episode, and I really thought maybe he was going to go with the contenders with the Operation Nighttime Rice,
yeah.
You know, taking Harry and Baden, stealing the rice in the pot, making their own fire, which is so crazy. And I loved this so much because, I mean, I have to imagine it was the night after the tribal council. So, you know, you see Luke get blindsided, and then he goes and he does this thing with Harry and Baden, which is not about strategy. It's about doing something devious, but it's not about the game, right? I mean, it is sort of tangentially, yeah. But it's not really a strategy thing. So it's almost like, oh, hey, look, Harry and Baden, like, look, I'm willing to do this with you. And, you know, let's do this devious thing together. Look at the relationships we're building. So from that perspective, I thought I was like, oh, yeah, OK, Luke will probably go with the contenders. But then over, you know, that was the beginning of the episode. And then over the course of the episode, you see him go back with the champions. So clearly that was not to be. But that's what I expected might have happened.
Yeah. And it's not game related, but it is, you know, as Luke says in confessional after, he's like, I think I could use those votes. So like everything right. with Luke, I mean, the social game is so built into the strategy, and his social game is so good. So it's like, how can he use it now? I just think that block of four is so, it's just way too threatening. And now they're at eight with that four. If Simon's slipping with him, then he's fine. I mean, I actually just also realized last night, imagine if Ross was in the game instead of Simon. Imagine we just switch him out as it was meant to be at the merge. Ross is someone who wanted to, as he said, tear the game up with David and Luke. That's how he wanted it to be. I mean, if this is completely fine if Ross is in the game, because Ross is working with Luke. I don't know who Simon is more loyal to, but I think there's major issues there having those women in the game. They're running it.
I like how you said, I don't know who Simon is more loyal to. And I was like, you could just stop after I don't know who Simon is, because if you just watched the show, that would definitely be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, ironically, Luke would have been in a way better spot if Daisy had played the idol correctly and Abby just had been idled out. And then you go back and you've got, you know, Peter and Janine, but then also Simon, and then kind of these like loose contenders. That would have been a way better game for Luke. But unfortunately, you know, she didn't play it right. I also wonder, could they have used this like instability to try and get Luke to their side? Could they have strong-armed it? I probably wouldn't advocate for this very almost bullying tactic in a game of relationships, but is there a way the contenders could have gone to Luke and said, look, unfortunately, we're going to put our votes on you. 25% chance you go home unless you give us a name and vote with us. And because we're playing the idol anyway, we're going to play it. But are you going to give us a name and then try to read if Luke is being truthful with them and try to vote with Luke? Probably wouldn't advocate for that, but I'm just saying in a desperate situation, there were options there. If the contenders were the Davids, there were options there.
And part of me also wonders, you know, how much impact did the ramifications of the 3-2-2-2, if I think that's right, vote split on Luke's original season, like how much did that impact him in terms of, you know, wanting to make risky votes at Tribal? Because, well, I don't know, he did vote for Harry for some odd reasons. I don't really know. Never mind. Scratch that. Nah, bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, but he did stay champion strong. I mean, there's a middle ground between voting in a minority of 3-9 person vote and then just making a flip. I mean, I don't think that you could have been, the champions can't begrudge him if he flips to the contenders. They left him out of the vote. You know, that's just basically his prerogative then to choose a different side, which again, yeah, definitely like a riskier play than just going, you know, a riskier in the short term play. But I also think maybe more of a winning play, because I think that fluid game, that's what's going to be Luke's pathway to the end if he can get there.
The fluid game, I think, really will help Luke. And I don't know, maybe we'll see things shaken up. The previews seem to suggest that, so we'll see.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
And we are back. All right. I think we've really got into the weeds of this episode. We're talking about things on, I think, a macro level and on a micro level with I think really getting into the weeds. I hope people are enjoying it. It's just talking about every possible conspiracy theory from Simon Black to what the Contenders could have done if they were Nick Wilson instead of just having the stick in their mouth. So we've really gone through a lot of it, but I also want to get to the chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, so my chizzy points. Obviously, we lost our chizzy leader in David this week, so we've really opened some things up. I'm going to give 3 points to Pia, who was credited with so much this week, and I think she deserved it. Obviously, blindsiding David and kind of the fake laughing and then, pulling one over on him, which they all did, but Pia seemed to really be kind of leading the charge. She brought Luke back into the fold, I thought, in a really good way. She was like, look, I protected you. It was going to be one of you, but I protected you. We have such a good personal relationship, you know? Obviously, mm-hmm. in Flushing Daisy's Idol, we saw her leading the charge on that. She also, came up with the idea to put the vote on John, which Harry did kind of identify, but hey, it worked. Everything she was doing this week was risky in every capacity, but she pulled off every part of it, and that really impressed me. So I'm giving her 3 points for that. I'm going to give 2 points to Janine, who is doing what Pia is doing, but in a more heavy-handed way, which concerns me in a bit. Like, she's very transparent with her plans. I mean, there was a point where she was standing with all the champions, and she's like, well, we want to, take out a contender for about 2 votes. And it's like, well, then what are you doing after that? Are you taking me out? Like, she's so heavy-handed. She's very transparent. She's almost like the central person at Tribal Council. She speaks for all the champions. She's not just a shield for Pia. Like, she's like this very central person for the champions, especially now that David is gone. But at the same time, she's credited with the Sean boot, especially. She tends to get her way based on, I think, the really good relationships that she has. I mean, she really is the godmother. And in the same way that I was like, David's doing really good things, but he's way too obvious about it, and it's going to come back to bite him at a point, but I'm still going to give him chizzy points for how flashy and impressive that is. I'm going to do the same thing to Janine for her aggressive gameplay and give her 2 points. And then I'm actually going to give a point to Harry. Because, the contenders were really on the back foot all week, of course. But really, it could have been Harry at any point. I mean, he was meant to go pre-merge. He was meant to go at the Casey boot, at the Matt boot. I mean, he's basically on borrowed time. It could have been him over Andy. I was surprised that it wasn't last week. It could have been him over Sean. He's as threatening in ways as Sean is. Sean's obviously very threatening, but Harry has his threatening facets as well. It could have been him over John, and just by a combination of, luck and circumstance, but also I think a lot of what he's doing, he has survived. And you have Luke saying he wants to work with him, you have Janine saying that he wants to work with him, and he correctly predicted the John vote, which was really impressive to me, and that earned him a point. And I'm going to give an honorable mention to Sean, who obviously was just in the one episode this week, but I thought his Luke pitch was really good. I think he was in a really tough spot. He did the best he could with a tough situation, and that earns an honorable mention from me.
Okay, so first of all, can you not cheat off my paper, please?
I always go first and then the guests are like, but you stole my points. I'm like, this is why I go first. Do you understand? My podcast, I go first.
How dare you? So I have a few things to add for each of the points. So I am also going to give 3 points to Pia. And now I don't want to get too much into sort of the edit of it all, but I could not help but notice how much credit the episode was giving to Pia for the David boot, and just giving her so much credit that it just stood out in my mind. I mean, all the confessionals about her being the smiling assassin or the Italian assassin or whatever her name is, I think smiling assassin, although I think I've heard both. But anyway, it really seemed like the show was going over the top to give her credit for this move. Now, I don't know if that was like how conscious a decision that was, what that means for her gameplay moving forward, because I know that you and Rob talked about this, where you discuss sort of the winners maybe aren't as flashy, aren't as sort of over the top, is almost Pia getting so much credit like the downfall of Pia's edit, or to just continue to affirm that she might be our eventual winner? I don't know what that means, but
her edit is amazing. I mean, especially in a unanimous besides Luke. Yeah, I don't know, because it's a weird thing where it's like the casuals don't see it. And my aunt asked me the other day, like, who do you think is winning? I'm like, yeah, probably Pia. And she's like, really, Pia? Like, the casuals found out Pia was on the show basically this week, which is crazy. But what she's been doing has been really under the radar. And obviously, it kind of, like, pales in comparison to how big of screen time even a Janine or a Harry or Luke or David have got. So for us as super fans, we're looking at it and being like, she gets so much credit. I think deserved credit, but the David boot was a near unanimous vote. And she got pretty much all the credit for it. So from a super fan perspective and people who analyze the edit, we're like, wow, she's getting an amazing edit. But, and maybe, as we say, maybe too good at edit. Maybe she's like a Rob goddess for that reason. But I think the casuals are like, Pia, really? Who is Pia? Which is a weird thing. It's just a very different way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe then this is sort of the compensation for the casuals, or you know, someone who's not really in on the edit reading or whatever. Really, just showing them like, hey, this may be a little heavy-handed of them spoon feeding. Like, look how important Pia is. Look what Pia's doing. Look at Pia having these really great relationships with Luke that we're going to tell you about over and over and over again. Like, maybe this is her sort of starting to come to the forefront as the person who will eventually win. You know, I think if I had to pick somebody, I think I would probably still pick Pia as my winner. But it was sort of interesting to see that. So because of that, even though I felt it was heavy-handed from the show, I do want to give Pia 3 points because of all of the wonderful things that she was doing over the course of these 3 episodes. I'm also going to give my 2 points to Janine. And I wanted to come on and give Janine 3 points because I just love Janine so incredibly much.
Are you
and
saying
I know
that so she gives you a job at Boost Juice?
Just that's really all I want. This is an interview for Boost Juice, right? Synergy, interconnectivity, business, stuff. Fruit smoothies, all about it. Vision, fresh. Okay. Anyway, that's the end of my pitch for Boost Juice. I think so too. I can make it in the business world. Right. I just really love Janine just because I think, you know, as a sort of, you know, I associate myself being a strong female and wanting to be successful in my career. And so this is just a little bit of me standing on my soapbox talking about how much I love Janine. So I wanted to come and give her 3 points. But I just, with all the heavy handedness at Tribal Council sometimes, like, oh, God, just like, yikes. Like, just maybe tone it down a little bit, Janine.
But at the same time, I agree with you. Like I said to my fiance last night, like, how cool is it that it's the godmother? How many seasons have we had the boring godfather? I love that Janine's the godmother. It's too aggressive for sure. But how great is it seeing a woman be too aggressive, but she's still running the game? Like, she's a baller. Awesome. I love it. And I love that we have a godmother. She's our first ever godmother, I'm pretty sure, in like 50 seasons of this thing when we've had like 8,000 godfathers. And yes, it's too heavy handed, but I also love it.
I would happily be part of her mob family.
Yes.
Like if she would ever want to recruit me, like I will follow her. She just is such an inspiration. I love her so much. It's so cool to have her on the show and doing, you know, such a great job. Like, yes, you can nitpick some of the things that she's done. Absolutely. Of course. And have she made some questionable moves? Like, I agree with you. The telling Sean about the fake idol, like that was a yikes kind of move, and targeting, you know, Simon over Harry, like what? But I can't help it. Anyway, so I love her so much.
Do, and you know what? I just really love Janine. And even what Luke was saying about her, about how she could be, you know, getting her massages or whatever she could be doing as a multi-millionaire. And she's chosen to come on the show and do something I would never do. She does not need the money. She's there for the experience and the adventure in the game. I love that. And the fact that she connects with Luke so well. I love that from both of them, that Luke can kind of come up to her level as someone with such a different life. And that she can kind of not come down to him, but definitely connect with him. And he's someone she would never, ever, ever meet in real life, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And someone who's so foreign from her world. And they have this amazing relationship, and I absolutely love it.
Ugh, I do too. So I'm going to give her 2 points. One, because I love her, so I'm biased, whatever, that's fine. But, you know, you can look at the things that she did this week. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look at her input into the Sean vote. I mean, obviously, very important. I think even though the show really wanted to give Pia all the credit for the David vote, some of that probably has to go to Janine. And then, you know, I don't know if it was her relationship with Luke or whatever the case may be, but really, like, being able to pull Luke back in, even though for some reason he voted for Harry. Anyway, she gets 2 points. And then my last point, I was trying to decide whether or not I wanted to give it to Harry or Luke. Because I think both of them had pros and cons over the course of these three episodes. What I really liked about Harry was the fact that he was having the correct reads. He had people who wanted to work with him. You know, he seems like, you know, after that big Oscar blunder, like, I mean, he really seems to be doing well. It just seems like, you know, he's with contenders that he even says that he can't trust. And that's really frustrating, I'm sure, for him. But I think ultimately I'm going to give my point to Luke, just because I think you can criticize his strategy in that last episode of, okay, maybe he should have flipped and gone with the contenders. But I think the fact that he was able to use his social game so well after being completely blindsided to really reintegrate, you know, I think that that's something that is really wonderful. And to go back to episode 15, where Sean gets voted out again, his social game is so strong. You know, you have Sean making a really strong case why Luke needs to go, and yet Luke's social relationships are what is able to keep him here. So I think ultimately my points are 3 for Pia, 2 for Janine, 1 for Luke, and I will give my honorable mention to Harry this week.
Yeah, I mean, watching the way Luke reacted to that blindside, you know, even at tribal council being like, amazing work, and then to come back from camp and just have a smile on his face, like he was laughing exactly. through it, being like, duh, Dave should have played his idol, like, what an approach to the game and to life. I tweeted this and it's too heavy-handed, maybe. I care about the show too much. I mean, Mike Bloom came on and talked about how Luke, you know, makes him see things differently as a father. And I love that. And I think it's really real. And for me, Luke as well, like, it makes me want to approach life better. I know that's a lot, but I was having a really bad day on Tuesday and I like watched Luke. Firstly, the whole like Rice Bandit thing put me in such a good mood. You know, 10 minutes of like pre-credit content from Luke is going to put me in a good mood. But not just that, like, I was like, damn, like, I cry over spilt milk. And Luke, it's not just in the game that he's reacting to, you know, David going really well, which he did, but more than that, like, the way that Luke approaches adversity in his life with his trademark Luke fun, positive, smiling approach is so commendable. I think that's why I love him so much. I think that's why he's really resonated with so many people. I said on Twitter, I wish I could bottle that and use it like in my daily life. I think it would be a good thing. I think it's why he's such a likable person in life. And I think it's why he does so well in the game. Like most things in life and in the game, often your best quality is often like your biggest flaw. Like David, he was a huge risk taker and he was, you know, really confident player, and that came back to bite him, but it was also his best quality. I feel the same about Luke. He has this incredible social game. He has such an amazing approach, this positivity that you just want to be around and work with. And it's also the reason people will be coming for him, because it's so threatening. And I just, beyond the game and how threatening it makes him and the problems that it will present for him in the next few episodes of the game for sure, I want to be like Luke. I want to be like that person in real life.
Yeah, I think it just, you know, makes you so happy. Like it gives you such a positive attitude on things. You know, that's how I feel when I see John's butt. I just get so happy. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
I was
just trying to make a joke. Didn't work.
Butts.
Oh, yes. That was nice. Very much here for that. The thing that actually does really bring me joy was JLP going full Shaka Bro in the immunity challenge. And then Simon doing like a Shaka Bro back. Ooh. And then John at one point was also like shocking it up. So that was also really fun. I was very much here for that.
Well, I want to get to the JLP tweets, but just a quick note on the Chizzy leaderboard. So David ends on 14. You just brought Luke up to 14. So he's tying with him. So I don't think David's going to win, because there's a lot of people hot on his heels. Harry is now up to 9. Janine just got up to 8. Pia just went from 1 vote to 7. So considering there's, you know, 6 votes on offer per week, you know, people are coming up behind David now, so it's going to be very, very interesting. And pay attention to Twitter for the full Chizzy leaderboards. Thank you to Randy Newpool for making the great graphics for that for me on Twitter. But let's get to some JLP tweets. Now, JLP lost his main punching bag in Andy, but he found a new one in Daisy. he made a similar point to you. He said Daisy pretending there wasn't an idol in her hand was almost as good as Sean pretending she didn't poop an idol at the challenge. Almost.
Yes, exactly. Same oh, good. Page. I'm glad that he was able to find a new punching bag. It's very important to me.
I know. There's no subtlety. He said, oh my God, Daisy is such a terrible actor. She could blow up the whole plan. The amazing thing is I don't actually have the context of when he tweeted this, so it could have been in like multiple episodes, could have been in any plan. I don't actually
know.
That's
true. Yeah, it can apply to multiple. You can just actually just tweet that and then just retweet it every time it's applicable, because it seems to be applicable a lot.
He also tweeted a photo of John's butt and he said, your cheeky little mullet flips will be missed, Jono. Dead said best looking bloke this season, I reckon. Hot take. Literally a hot take. Like, who is the hot?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. That's a hot take. I know we're here to discuss strategy, but I think it was actually in this episode, right? Didn't who is it that talked about like, oh, who's my type or something?
Yeah,
didn't
they were talking Daisy about who's the best looking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, Sean. Hello.
Sean, so, you know. A jury villa is gorgeous. But they were saying, like, I mean, look, it's a very good looking jury. It's a good looking cast. So, I mean, an embarrassment of riches. Why rank them when just really
true?
It's just a good looking jury and a good looking cast.
All gorgeous. All have their assets. So lovely.
Speaking of, JLP did his requisite inappropriate tweet. He said Baden first to find his balls. All right.
Oh, man. There were so many good lines. So I co-host the RHAP B&B during the regular, the U.S. Survivor. I was going to say regular Survivor. That's such an insult. The U.S. Survivor season. And one of the games that we've played is you know, inappropriate quotes by Jeff Probst. And so the sooner you find your balls, Baden first to find his balls, finesse your balls
is a big one. Yeah.
Oh, so good. And I don't know if you caught it, but the immunity challenge from episode 15, Jonathan said, all right, everyone, assume the position. So that was also a little bit fun from JLP.
Fun is a strong word. He also said, is it the ultimate showdown or the ultimate promo hype? Who knows, but are you willing to risk not watching to find out? So this was talking about the big promo of the showdown between David and Sean. And I love that JLP is like, look, is the promo trolling you? Is it going to be that good? I can't say, but you need to watch just to see if we are leading you on. This is a very good point. Is it going to be that good? What a great reason to tune in.
That's man. If Janine really is hiring, like, get JLP on your marketing team. You know, he could run the Twitter for Boost Juice.
He's a competitor. Why would you put him? I mean, I work in social media in my real life, Janine. Don't hire JLP. Hire me. Speaking of, I did the best thing I've ever done on social media this week when I got Luke Toki onto Twitter. It was a fun conversation. I was like, Luke, you should get Twitter. And he was like, haha. Okay. And then he made Twitter.
Oh my gosh. Shannon, you do know how to play Survivor. Those powers of persuasion.
I was like, that was easy. I had more points to convince you if you needed it. So I have now appointed myself Luke's social media manager. Go follow him on Twitter. It's LUK3_Toki, TOKI. He had to make it difficult for you. Just like throw in some numbers. But if you want it, you're going to work for it. So go follow him.
I'm trying to wait. What is the handle again?
So LUK3, like Luke, but with a three, like that erroneous okay. Harry vote. That's where the three comes in. _Toki.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm trying to teach Luke Twitter behind the scenes, which is a really fun subplot of my life right now. He's getting it.
Oh yeah, I found him.
Yeah.
Oh, he is 609 followers.
Yeah, in like 2 days. Good job, internet. Go follow Luke on Twitter.
Love it.
Okay. And yeah, let's get to some of the questions. Jake Larson asked something very interesting. He said, I'm curious about your overall thoughts on passing idols during the votes being read for the US version versus Australia, Survivor, and South Africa in terms of better TV and fairness. So to talk about this, so Luke asked David if he had the idol. David says yes. He ends up taking the idol with him. I'm fairly certain in US Survivor, you're not allowed to pass the idol while the votes are being read because, you know, the game is done. Like, when the votes are being read, really, the game should be over for you if you're getting voted out. So in South African Survivor, it's been confirmed for us that you can pass the idol. And Lucas said on Instagram that he thinks David could have. I don't have full confirmation. But I have to say, in terms of TV and fairness, I do not like this. I don't think they should be doing this. I mean, getting the most votes. I mean, David was getting 8 votes. So he has 5 votes. Is that not the same as your torch being snuffed? Like, he knows he's gone. That's the only reason he would pass the idol. So I do think that you shouldn't be passing it. Otherwise, Survivor history would be different. You know, like, for example, Scott Pollard being voted out with an idol in his pocket, with Carl Jason's idol, and he can't give it back to him while the votes are being read. That's the whole point. You have the idol, you've made that decision, it's in your possession, and if you get voted out with it, that's your idol and that's your mistake. So I think in terms of TV, someone getting voted out with an idol and not being able to pass it is more dramatic. It's definitely better TV. It kind of resets everything for an idol hunt in the next episode, which is more interesting. So I think better in terms of TV and better in terms of fairness, because as soon as you're getting, you know, 4 or 5 votes and you know you're going home, the game is done. And I don't think you should be able to make a move like giving an ally an idol.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just looking at it from once the votes are being read, I mean, that signifies the end of the gameplay for that round. So yeah. I agree with you. I think that, you know, nothing else should happen. You know, I don't know if you can implement some sort of trapdoor in this scenario in order to take care of people that maybe try to pass off idols. But that, you know, that's when the game ends. Or, you know, well, literally for someone, but yeah. But that's when that round ends. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that you should be able to pass off an idol. It's over. It's done. Yeah. Like if you have those votes, you're going home. It's done.
Yeah. And it's more dramatic. Well, how dramatic is it that David is sitting there with the idol around his neck saying it's a $500,000 piece of jewelry rather than having given it to Luke because he happened to have more time because he got 8 votes rather than 3 votes, you know, more, you know, so that just gives him time to pass the idol, right. Which is not a thing that should factor into the game.
Then do you have to go back to the tapes and it's like, okay, when exactly is he officially voted out? Like as the vote is being like unfolded or, you know, like especially with the numbers too, like you talked about, well, if it's a 5 to, you know, you yeah. ultimately get 8, you're only at 5 votes. Like you're out, you know, like there's no way. So, I don't know. I think it's too risky. Otherwise you got to have those live cams. You got to go to the replay. We know how in sports that can be crazy. So I think just avoid it and don't let people hand off the idols.
Yeah, this is a similar thing. It's like the game is quite definitive. It's like we said the same thing with Andy last week. You know, that was a polarizing take in terms of whether Andy should have been able to say David had an idol. And it's like, well, he's still on the field of play. It's like, yeah, but his torch has been snuffed. Like, I feel like the votes are being read. Like, they're very definitive things of when the game, like the structure of the game. It's not just like, you know, this like fluid thing where it's like, are they still in the game? Are they not in the game? It's very, very structured of when you should and shouldn't be able to make moves. And it's that time is when the votes have started being read. Game time is over. No talking. So strict. Sean Lachlan asks, how likely is it that Baden watched Christian Hubicki play right before he came out? And to that I would say also Nicole in Survivor South Africa, which he definitely didn't watch because that aired after they played the game. But people talking during challenges is really, it's really becoming a thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it a difference if you're just like chit chatting versus you're actively listing items and sort of going on these monologues about stuff? If you're playing games like Baden was doing, you know, saying what's in common about these cities that I'm listing, I don't know, maybe they're like different varieties of the same thing, but I was here for it. I thought it was fun. I think my favorite part of this whole moment though was when I can't remember if it's Baden or Simon was like, yeah, let's do the AFL premieres, and Jeanine was like, oh no, F that, and just like
I was like, that's what I can actually do. I wanted to play along. I wanted to, you know, obviously because Simon was the one doing it, they didn't show it, but I was keen to play along. I can't do the Olympics or Eurovision, but I can do AFL premieres.
No, it was, and it was kind of fun because he starts listing cities. I was like, ooh, I get to play along too.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I think they're Olympics. And then he's like doing the Fibonacci sequence. I was like, I know that. Oh,
I couldn't
cool.
do that one. Give me the AFL premieres. I couldn't do the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah, but it's like a little game for us viewers at home. So
yeah, so I was thinking about this and I was like, what would be my thing that I could list like a whole bunch of things for, like Baden was doing? Because that was impressive. He knew a lot of different topics, and I was like, oh, I would do, you know, Survivor winners, second place, third place, all the places of Survivor really. And then I was like, you know what, I need to get a life. I need more than this. That can't be everything that I have. Then that's what I would be listing. That is my whole personality at this point.
I love it that those are the first things that come to mind that you would list.
That's last okay. place in Survivor, first boots, exactly. That's what I would be listing.
Yeah, although, you know, if you are trying to hide what a big Survivor fan you are, that might not be the best thing to go with. But
yeah, you don't want to be like,
you know,
bringing up like Jessica DeBenn. You know, you want to say you're not a fan. Like, don't be bringing up first boots from like 15 years ago, but. Yeah, I like the game, Maiden. You know what? These are boring challenges. These are long endurance challenges. You know, make it a game for the viewers. I think I loved it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of these immunity challenges that are just like, how long can you do this for? And so I have to imagine that that just gets incredibly boring. Although, oh my God, just briefly, we have to, not to go back to the ball challenge because I want to talk about balls, but how lame was it that no one found their bags?
It was such a weird challenge. It was like all you had to do was find balls, and then it was like a weird obstacle course that had like one part to it.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so you're going to dig for this thing, and then only three people are ultimately going to find them, where it's like pretty clear it's coming down to Luke or Baden. Like, that was lame.
Yeah, anyway, they hit the balls badly. We got so many good questions this week. Randy Newpool asked, do you think Luke should have told Daisy the champions were targeting John to sacrifice Abby and weaken that female alliance without getting blood on his hands? Because we did say, if Abby gets idled out, it's probably a better spot for Luke. So do you think he should have had active agency in that and telling them where to play the idol, but still voting with the champions?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that this is interesting because it really comes down to, I feel like for me, that conversation between Baden and Luke and like who's going to tell who what information. And so I don't know if it was something about the fact that Baden like did give all this information to Luke, like, yeah, we're all going to vote for Abby, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know, maybe Baden like gave up too much. Like he should have made Luke give him a little bit more information and maybe that could have evolved into a more revealing conversation from Luke. But because like that could have been a really interesting way to go about it if Luke is planning on going with the contenders. But I think like ultimately his decision was to go with the champions. If you're going to go with the contenders, that, yeah, then maybe you have a couple ways to play it. You can spill who they're going to play or who they're going to put their votes on, so you know that you can play the idol correctly and you can vote with them. Or, you know, you can still feign like you don't know what's going on. So I think there are a lot of ways that you could have gone with that. But ultimately, obviously, he chose to go with the contenders or for the champion, so like it didn't end up mattering.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who has criticized Andy for playing both sides but also neither side, I feel like it would have been a little too cute, because either you're like only subtly giving the information so the contenders don't even think that you're really with them, which is kind of a hard spot when you've like screwed over the champion side and then need to work with the contenders, or you give them all the information but then you're like vulnerable to, can you trust them? Are they going to tell the other side later that that's something that you did? Like, now you're playing double agent, which can work, but you're very reliant on the people you're playing double agent for, the contenders, not ratting you out. I don't know if you could have had that trust in them. It could blow up really spectacularly. I feel like he's in the spot as a swing vote. It's his prerogative which side he's going to go with. He has one side that would be new relationships. He has the other side who just betrayed him. I don't think that it's the kind of thing where anyone could have really been that mad if he turned on them right after they'd voted out his main ally. So I feel like kind of pick a side. I think that side should have been the contenders, but I feel like it should have been more strong than just kind of two half measures. I think he should have just gone all in with the contenders, or he did go all in with the champions, but at least he like has a home rather than kind of doing this whole cutesy move and then relying on the contenders to either work with him or not rat him out. Like, that can be really dicey.
Yeah, that would be a really precarious position to be put in. I mean, I don't know, maybe Luke does thrive on all of that chaos, so that might have worked.
That would have been chaotic as hell.
Oh, for sure. He might have been able to turn that into something useful, but it is definitely a risk.
Yeah, I've definitely been like, Luke should make the game as chaotic as possible. That's the best way for him to win, but I'm like, not that chaotic. That's like a little bit too far.
Too chaotic.
A little bit. Speaking of Luke, as we constantly do, the aforementioned Edward Morris asks, Luke came seventh in Australian Survivor 2017. Will he beat this?
Will he be able to come in a placement better than seventh place? So, I mean, if we're looking at what we have, so how many people do we have left right
so
now?
We
we're
eight.
At the final eight, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he would have to make it two more votes, right, in order to then be sixth place, if I can count.
You know, you do the Fibonacci sequence. Like, you're
no
fine.
No Luke. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm no Luke. I can't count 4-4-1.
Yeah. Also, Baden did Chizzy winners. I could definitely list those. So that's another thing. Yeah. Another Survivor related thing. That's actually, you know, that's also Survivor. I need a hobby. A different hobby.
Oh my gosh.
Another hobby.
It'd be so funny if you were out there and be like, yeah, I'm listing Chizzy winners. Like, that's when you get cut, like Simon Black gets cut from the show. They're just like, this crazy woman is out here listing some made up metric that she decides each season. Like, yeah. No.
She's too Survivor focused for Survivor. We have to edit this out of the show.
Like, and that's saying something.
Okay,
so if you're looking at, you know, who we have left, so we have three contenders and we have the five champions. You have to start thinking about, okay, what is going to happen? So if Luke does try to flip over with the other contenders, then you still end up having a 4-4. So we'd have to maybe pull Simon with him, which could make it a 5-3. Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, who? Simon Purple. You'd have to pull him over, and then you could make that. Then I could see that helping Luke get further in the game. However, if that's unable to happen and those three women are able to stay strong, I don't know. I don't see Luke maybe necessarily going next, but the vote after that could really be a difficult situation for him.
I think he's going to do it. Maybe I'm too optimistic. Maybe this is when they get me. I'm confident, like how David was confident, and I'm about to be blindsided with an idol in my pocket about Luke. But there seems to be a lot of heat on Janine versus Harry. There's still a couple of contenders that they maybe want to take out. I think it's a really hard road to the end for him, which we actually have a question about, which I think will be good to answer. But I think he can do better than seventh. And how amazing that 2/3 of the cast have been voted out and he came in as such a threat. And in our preseason podcast, I was saying that all I wanted was for him to escape that 5-episode purge. And we're now freaking 17 episodes into it. And he's almost, you know, equaled his standing in the first season. Like, I'm so impressed, even though he did get blindsided this week. And I do think he should have gone with the contenders. I'm still so impressed in his game. And to talk about that question I just mentioned, Andrew Shim asks, the Sean David John boots remind me of the Josh Jeremy Wes boots from Samuel Del Sur. And I completely agree with that. I definitely saw the Josh Jeremy comparison. That was actually my main worry for David, because a lot of the time that does happen. You have a really, really big rivalry with someone. They get taken out and then you immediately get taken out after. I mean, Steven and Joe Anglim is another one from Survivor Cambodia. Like, Survivor history, I think, has a lot of examples of this happening. And then he also added in Wes, which I think, you know, makes sense. John is like the Wes for sure. And it was a weird idol thing happening. And Daisy said, you got to risk it to get the biscuit, and kind of like evoked Wes there. Anyway, go back to the question. With Luke in the Natalie Anderson slot, what does Luke need to do to remain in the Nat Anderson trajectory? On Salmon d'Orsay, Nat recovered after Jeremy's boot by finding a Love You Baylor Wilson to be her new 20. Who within the Champions Alliance can be Luke's Baylor?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting question. I mean, I have to think it's Baden here. You know, I think that
Baylor and Baden, perfect.
Baylor, that's the only reason. criteria justified. Similar names. I think Baden here, you know, has demonstrated his close relationship to Luke. I think, you know, not to go back to the Operation Nighttime Rice, which was all about, you know, I think that they've demonstrated their close relationship. And then if they can pull in Harry and, you know, make some other things work, I really feel like Baden is the key here to helping Luke get deep into the game.
Yeah, I don't want to be dramatic, but I feel like Baden is like Luke's only hope to win the game. I really think he needs a partner in crime, and he doesn't have that right now, which is weird for Luke. I think that definitely Baden could be that for him. I could totally see that, but I definitely see that trajectory. I hope that he is a Natalie Anderson. How good would that be? And the last question, so many good questions this week. Jonathan Lilia asks, how upset are you that we didn't get to see Harry try to explain why Oscar wasn't on his plate? I was waiting there, screaming at my TV, like, show the plate. I wanted to see it so badly. And then Oscar wasn't even on the plate. What an incredible snub. And then Australian Survivor responded to me on Twitter and were like, Oscar isn't real, which is like kind of telling a child that Santa isn't real. How dare you do that? Don't come into my mentions, Australian Survivor official account. And Oscar is the best person. Do not invoke his name like that.
Okay. Do you think that the official Survivor account was tweeting at you because they were in on the joke? They knew that you were joking, or because they genuinely thought that you thought that Oscar existed?
No. I think they get it. I know the people behind the account.
Okay. All right. Good. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Because otherwise, I seem like a right idiot, don't I?
Well, I kind of now just want to go ahead with this, and we'll tweet heavily just talking about how Oscar, like, oh, I love Oscar. It's so great that Harry, a father, has made it so deep into the game.
Yeah, I want Harry to win for his kid.
Pretend. Yeah, exactly. You know, he can pay for all the school clothes, and I'm just going to continue to pretend like I never heard that Oscar is completely fake, completely made up.
But I think that Harry is such a loose cannon that you believe he's lying about Oscar being fake as well. Who knows?
Yes. Exactly. I think the plate thing, though, definitely goes back to the phone call, right? Where it's like, okay, is this a lie that we have to keep up at this point in time? Like, did they prepare two Harry plates, one with the sort of, you know, stock image of a child that he's pretending to be Oscar? Maybe you can still see, like, the watermark a little bit on the side, like, when they show him the plate. Also, these plates are super silly. Like, I think it's cool that they're doing something with, like, oh, it's your family. Yay. Like, you get to see a little bit from home, but at the same time, like, oh, okay, so these are those iron-on plates that you get. Hobby Lobby or whatever. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Everyone has
like
one.
This is the best we could do. Right. Are you gonna be doing like, oh, this is a friendship bracelet that was woven by my mother, you know? Like, oh, okay. Like, let's go with these goofy plates, but I don't know, it's cute, I guess.
Let's give them something super smashable in the jungle. I mean, look how upset some people were when they like ate their food on the plate last time and kind of ruined the plate, which I love it. It's like a moral dilemma. It's like, do you care enough about your family not to eat on this plate? Because that would be obviously very convenient for you to have a plate, but also don't you want to see your family's faces and you got to be careful because it might smash. I mean, it's a very inconvenient gift to give to the contestants, but I think it makes it interesting. I just love my running theory about Harry's incredibly strategic girlfriend, who's a really good strategist and would definitely win the season if she was on it. Maybe she was one of the contender women, but we never got to meet them, so we don't actually know. But I kind of love that they were like, look, Harry's girlfriend, he has made the Oscar lie, so like, it's the ball's in your court, right? You're making the plate, so like, we're just letting you know he's told people he has a baby, so you better put a baby on it. And she was like, I will not do that, because it's a terrible move, Harry, and I told you not to do it, so I'm just going to give you a normal plate. I mean, she should get Chizzy points. She's such a good player.
Yeah, I would also like to think about who made the plates. So like you said, is it the loved ones that are making the plates, or like, do they just sort of get these like hodgepodge? Yeah, can you imagine?
Like, that's such a craft afternoon production, just like making these loved ones plates.
Yeah, like, so we're going to have a bonding afternoon. Yeah, we're going to be like, okay, all right, team, like, let's all sit down. We got to make these plates. And so they're trying to, like, cut out the pictures that were sent by family and try to, like, oh, yeah, okay, we'll just, like, do these together.
Get that scrapbook glue. Put it on.
Yeah, this is, like, the scrapbooking bonding moment for the producers. That's what I think I've chosen to believe. That, and that Oscar is definitely real.
Because if it's not production, then they made the family members do that. So it's like, not just like, hey, can you write a letter to your family member? It's like, I need you to take a day and make this plate. Like, I have a job and I'm probably taking care of some kids. Well, not Oscar, but some other people have kids they have to take care of because their spouse is on the island, and they now have to go make a whole plate. That's such an ask. Like,
all right, here, we're going to mail you this kit. You're going to have to get the pictures and paints. The, you know, the letters and the paints.
This is a bizarre thing that they've done. Doesn't get spoken about enough.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
No wonder they used it for two rewards, because people missed out. And imagine just being like, oh my God, I spent a whole day on that. Like, you better show it to my loved one.
Guys, we already have the plates, okay? Let's just... Oh, or it was one of those things where it was like they saw who was going to go on that second reward, and they were like, none of them have plates.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, none of them have plates. Perfect. Here are your plates.
Anytime anyone's on a reward that hasn't received their plate with only other non-plate people, this is what I want. Not champions versus contenders, not David versus Goliath, plate versus non-plate. That's a true dichotomy of the season.
I'm super excited for the really specific moral dilemmas that get to happen later in the season for the few people that don't have plates. And it's like, you could have this plate from your loved ones, or, you know, whatever.
They have to bring it out. It's so much effort. And also, so that's all the questions I have. And now I'm wondering what the hashtag is. And I think plate versus non-plate is a late entry. Hashtag cereal Simon. Hashtag biscuitless. It just rolls off the tongue. Daisy has no biscuits.
Yeah, biscuitless is pretty funny. I don't know. Plate versus no plate is also... That could be like the next season of Survivor also, you know, if we're talking about themes. I don't know. I'm fine with either of those. I like them both.
So I was just thinking about the comparison that John was Wes, and then it's like Daisy Keith Nail, because she's not Keith Nail. Like, it does kind of work.
Who said stick with the plan? We say that at some point in time.
I mean, look, Keith Nail used an idol and ended up idling out his own son. And Daisy has maybe used idols worse. So
yeah, that's true. That's a good comparison. I like it.
I think let's go Serial Simon, you know, because I feel like that would be a really good podcast that I would tune into. And I just want to know. Yeah. And I hear the music.
That's why we got to get you a soundboard so that you can really go all out with the Serial Simon segment.
But I heard it rolled off the song, and I hope everyone did as well. But all right, Liana, thank you so much for talking about this for over 2 hours with me. I think we got into the weeds of everything, which I really enjoyed, because I love nerding out about the strategy with you and talking about balls. But where can everyone find all the other things you have going on in the podcast world?
Well, first, thank you so much, Shannon, for having me. This really was a lot of fun. You know, there are only a handful of people out there that I can have these types of discussions with, like really getting into all the insanity of a show that airs so much and has so much content, but really is just so enjoyable. And you've done a really great job with the podcast. It's been so much fun listening to your coverage this season.
Thank you.
You can find me on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. I during the U.S. Survivor season, do the RHAP B&B with Mike Bloom. I've also been doing a little show called Big Brother. You know, I don't like to talk about it too much, which, oh, by the way, so Shannon, just you can, you know, go do something else for a second. So one of the Jury Villa quotes reminded me of something that Jackson from the season of Big Brother says. So John said, "I'd rather die like a king than live like a coward." So for those handful of people that know what I'm talking about, that reminds me of Jackson. Anyway, okay, Shannon, you can come back now.
Just got my cup of tea and I'm back. What are we talking about?
Right, exactly. And yeah, so that's what I'm up to. You know, I'm floating around from here to there, guesting on podcasts. But yeah, come check me out on social media.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Shannon Gate. Follow Luke as well. We've got all the chilly chats on Twitter, all the question threads. We've got so many great questions every week. And I just thank you so much to everyone who submits questions as well. So you can always find that on Twitter. Also, the RHAP patron group. That's where I put those question threads as well. Also, subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed. And also, tell your friends. This is something that I don't think people make enough use of. Everyone's like, subscribe, rate, review, do all those things. But also, I feel like everyone is watching the show. The international audience is getting into it because the season's so good. Australia is enthused. As I said, the ratings are fire. So if you know people who are watching and maybe will enjoy a couple of hours of strategy getting into the historical weeds of every part of this, which I should hope should be everyone, then, you know, tell a friend. I think that would be really good. And next week, we have such a good guest. We have the great Tessa O'Halloran. She played with Luke. Amazing. I kind of love, so like, I was thinking about you and Tessa, Liana, like, you are both these like strong female strategic superfan doctors. And I was like, what a great couple of weeks for me to feel so stupid. But I love it because you're two of my favorite people to talk to and two of the people whose ideas I respect so much about the game. So I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, that's going to be so much fun. I'm very much looking forward to that. Tessa was, you know, it's going to be really great to get her insight with Luke, especially. So I'm very much looking forward to her perspective for sure.
Yes, the victim of the famous 3-2-2-2 vote that Luke did for some reason. That was the first, you know, week of Survivor I ever recapped on a podcast with Nick. So definitely excited about that. And also Survivor South Africa marches on. Mike and I had a really fun recap last week talking about it. And, you know, it's now been lapped. It's now, we were going into episode 16 and I just watched episode 17 of Australian Survivor. In fact, if I'm correct, I think, so there's 7 episodes left. There's 3 again next week. And then I assume they're going to have to go to 2 because there's 4 episodes left. So, you know, it doesn't really fit to do 3 and then 1. So I think it's going to be 3-2-2. And that means Australian Survivor will end 4 days after South African Survivor. I've been talking about Survivor South Africa since May. I don't even understand what is going on.
Yeah, I don't know. The difference between a marathon and a sprint, yeah. Like, that's definitely what it is here. It's crazy.
I definitely made that comparison, and I hate running. This is the only type of running I will do, but I'm still not keeping up. So, yeah, next week on Survivor South Africa, we have the great Werner, one of the best players ever in any iteration of Survivor. I'm happy to say that. So that's going to be amazing. But, Liana, thank you so much for coming on this podcast with me, recapping episodes 15 to 17 in week 6. It's a lot, and I had a great time.
Of course, the pleasure was all mine. Very enjoyable. And, you know, if you and me and Mike get together at the end of all these crazy Survivor seasons to do another Survivor Year in Review, definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think this will rate pretty highly because it's been super fun. Still absolutely loving it. So thank you guys so much for listening. Hashtag Serial Simon. Thank you again, Liana. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you with Tessa next week. Now I'm going to throw it to my interview with Sean. Bye. Sean, thank you so much for coming onto Rob Has a Podcast. I think you played a great game and I'm a little overwhelmed by how many questions I have for you about it because you were such an integral member of the season.
Oh, good to know. As a big fan of the show, I didn't want to be just a small cog. So I'm happy that people are interested.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot going on. So I'm going to dive right in if I can. And the first question I've had for many weeks, I'm so glad to get you on the line because I want to know, how did you and David connect initially to know that you both had the idol to make that, you know, huge switch?
Yeah, that was completely by chance. So I found the idol the day before. And then at the challenge, we were in the water and he was sort of playing on me, I guess. And after one of the points, we had to sort of reset for the next point. And he said, bro, I've got something for you. And I sort of like pushed him away. I was like, yeah. I thought he was trying to talk in the smack. And then he said, no, honestly, I've got something for you. He said, near your well, there you'll find an idol. And as soon as he said that, I said, I've got it. And he said, bro, bring it to the challenge tomorrow. I said, no, let's just wait till swap. Let's see what happens, because we weren't far away. And he said, no, really, I need it. So he said, bring it to the challenge tomorrow. And then, yeah, the rest is history. So it was completely by chance. He was going to throw it out there, just a little, I guess, the fishing line, and sort of see who bit. But he was going to do it to everybody, but I was the first one that he asked, and by chance, I was the one who'd found it a day before.
Wow, that's lucky or unlucky, depending on the way that it goes. So another question I've had for a while is, did you really not look at the idol for several days, as the show told us? And if so, do you think you would have known it was fake if Janine hadn't told you?
Yeah, that is unfortunately legit. So when he passed it to me, I noticed it was wrapped up, and I thought, why has he got it wrapped up? Because it's such a big package. That's why I handed his to him unwrapped, because it was such a big package when it was all wrapped up. The necklace is quite big. So he handed it to me, and I immediately put it inside my hoodie pocket, and I started feeling it, and it felt exactly like the little skull that was on my one. So I was like, you're being paranoid, because part of me was like, because I was thinking the strategy behind it, because before I did it, I was like, I hope this guy's not going to switch me a rock or anything, because it could easily be done. But I thought, but what's the point in that? I said, because yes, he's going to get an idol, but he's going to swindle somebody and immediately make an enemy. In a social game, that's not really what you want to be doing. So I thought, you're being paranoid, he's dropping an idol, it feels exactly like what you gave away. Just stop being silly and stuff. And then just never got around to look at it. I mean, it's, you know, hard to get privacy around camp sometimes and stuff. So it sort of put it in the bottom of the bag and was just like, okay, it's there if I need it.
Yeah, but do you think you would have known it was fake when you eventually looked at it without that intel from Janine?
Yes, I definitely would have, because, when I did it and sort of had a look, I mean, I knew what mine looked like because, well, I sort of found it, buried it and stuff like that initially. And, knew exactly what it looked like, and it had like a round wood backing to it, and his didn't have that. So I immediately would have been suspicious of it.
Yeah. I'm interested in your relationship with Janine, because in your, you know, Ponderosa, you kind of talk about how you credit her for your exit, but you've also worked with her at certain points. Obviously she gives you that information. So can you tell me a bit about that relationship?
Yeah, that was a relationship. It's one of my regrets that I didn't work on that harder. So after Tribe Swap, I stayed on Contenders Beach, and Abby, Janine, Pia, Simon and Ross came over, and I immediately hit it off really well with Janine, Abby, Pia, Simon and stuff. So was really sort of trying to not play too hard, because I could see that Casey was going very hard and they were getting a bit upset at that. So I was like, you know what? Treat this like the start of the game. Just build relationships and go from there. And then they told me about the idol and that they were mistrusting Dave, and I could feel like they were sort of wanting to bring me in on their thing. But then I got pulled over to the other tribe in that tribal and then became a champion. So that relationship sort of fell apart. And looking back now, one of the regrets is after Merge that I didn't put more time in with Janine. You saw in last night's episode that she came and looked for some mandarins with me, and we had a really good talk then. But since Merge, that was really the only good talk we had. And I honestly feel like if I would have put more time into that relationship, I would still be there.
Yeah, she's obviously the godmother, very important. And what was your reaction when you did get swapped over, to seeing that your, you know, main ally Daisy had aligned with Dave, and now you knew about the swindle with the fake idol?
Well, I just knew that we had to get rid of one of those two boys. I mean, it should have happened immediately. There's no way Sam should have been gone home first. You know, that was quite a personal thing between Daisy and Sam. They didn't like each other from early on in the game. But I think Daisy just had to put that aside for a second, take out at least one of the boys before taking out Sam. Mm. But she was so paranoid that Sam was going to get her first. So I just knew that one of these guys had to go. So I came over there and I was like, listen, they're still very tight with the other side. they've got to go. But I just couldn't believe how those guys weaseled in their way in there. Like in a game where, you know, numbers is so important, let's just get to merge up. Then we've got options. You don't get to merge up and you straight away you're on the defense. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying stay contender loyal the whole way through, but you at least want to be at merge, numbers up, so you've got options to do a few things.
Yeah, and speaking of that, we obviously see this challenge throw idea, you know, a lot of it coming from Andy, but where did you sit with all of the challenge throwing in terms of, A, the first challenge that Andy was throwing, and then the next one that Andy's not even in, where Ross gets medevaced, were you trying to throw anything there?
I was all for Andy throwing the challenge. So we got all the old contenders together, and I said, look, we need to throw a challenge. It's like, we need to get rid of one of these guys. Time's running out before merge. It has to happen, but we agreed that we were only going to do it if everybody was on board. So John immediately poo-pooed the idea. He said, I hate the thought of throwing a challenge. We should go out there to win every time and yada, yada, yada. Baden didn't seem too keen either, but I sort of knew it had to be done. And just before the challenge, Andy said, am I throwing this? Because he was on the puzzle. And I said, yeah. So I sort of felt bad against going for everybody, but I just knew it had to be done. But even with Andy trying to throw it, Baden was still too good on the puzzle. So it didn't happen. But, yeah, so it didn't go exactly as planned because I really think one of those guys needed to go before merge.
Yeah, what about that next challenge where Ross gets medevaced? Do you think you could have thrown it there? Well, it didn't seem like you guys were trying anymore to throw it.
Yeah, we sort of stopped because Andy copped a lot of heat from John and Baden and even a bit from Daisy when he obviously tried to throw that challenge, and it was clear that he was falling out of favour with them, so I sort of didn't want to go down with that ship. So I thought it was sort of best. I think we missed the opportunity, so after that, when we just tried to win.
Yeah, well, you seem to be quite close to Andy. So, firstly, did you believe that he hadn't voted for Daisy at the Hannah vote, which is another vote I want to talk about? And also, how close do you think you were to convincing Daisy to save him last week?
I wasn't too sure what went on with that Daisy vote. So the boys were coming to us trying to tell us that Andy came to them with this idea about voting Daisy off, and I was convinced that was them just trying to drive a wedge between us, and I thought it was just Hannah sort of doing a last-ditch effort to try and save herself, and I thought that's what the Andy vote was, the Daisy vote was. And I confronted Andy about it too, and they didn't actually show it, and I said, mate, what was the go with the Daisy vote? He said, I swear to you, on my mother's grave, that wasn't me. He said, Hannah kept asking me questions during the tribal, and she said, I'm going to vote for Daisy. So I didn't know who to believe. I thought it was most likely Andy, but I couldn't be certain. But, their relationship was sort of falling apart really, really quick. And what was the second part to that, sorry?
Yeah, did you think that you could have got Daisy to play the idol on him? Obviously very tough if she doesn't trust him.
No, I don't think so. Had he not gone to the boys with that information and put a vote on her, I think we could have. But I never really forced her to do it. I think that was a bit of an editing trick because, you know, if she said, what should I do with the idol? I always said, look, Daisy, it's up to you. I said, consider the possibility about putting it on Andy because we do need to stay, you know, with the numbers. But, you know, I also knew that their relationship was pretty much dead at that point. So I thought it was a bit of a long shot. But regardless, I just wish she hung on to the thing.
Yeah, well, okay, well, let's talk about that Hannah vote, where I think you were really great. What gave you the idea to split on Hannah instead of Luke?
Yeah, so the day before we lost that challenge and went to tribal, I sort of said to everybody, so we lose, it's going to be Luke or Dave, we split the vote. And then it was after we lost the challenge, and we had a bit of time after the challenge before we got back to camp, I had a bit of thinking time and sort of time to myself, and I thought, well, Luke's such a crafty player. I said, if he's got an idol and they get sniffed that we're going to vote for them, I said, Dave's going to play his idol, Luke's going to play his idol, that's going to mean I'm going home. So I said to everybody, I said, we're going to have to throw Hannah under the bus here, so let's split on Dave and Hannah, and if Dave plays his idol, Hannah goes. So, and it was lucky we did because I would have been going home had we not done that.
Yeah, honestly, really a brilliant move from you. Say that you had, you know, got the numbers with the contenders at the merge with those six. Who did you kind of not trust from the contenders? Who do you think wouldn't have stuck contender strong?
Baden, I think maybe. Yeah, he sort of, it was clear when I came over to the Champions and the amount of time he was spending with Luke that he wasn't with the Champions, but he was playing both sides. Very smart. So he was certainly giving us information about his chats with Luke, but then what was he giving Luke? Like, we weren't to know. So it was a bit hard, but I thought he was probably most in trouble of slipping over. I knew John would sort of stay, you know, contender. He's just that type of guy, I think. Daisy as well, I was pretty sure about him. And Andy was a wild ball as well. I mean, you sort of didn't know where he was at. There were times in the game when I really thought I could trust him, and then times when I just thought this guy can't be trusted. So he was the hardest to get a read on, I think.
Yeah, and what was your reaction? You talk about Daisy, but what was your reaction to finding out she had voted for you, whenever that may have been?
Totally fine. I've got that question a heap today and a lot on social media and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's been copying a lot of hate, I guess, from supporters of mine. But I think it was a smart move, and I've told that to people, that I would have done the same thing in her boots. We always spoke about always be on the right side of the vote. If we had the numbers to vote off Luke, fantastic, let's go for it, let's risk it. But it was clear that after Janine spoke at Tribal that it wasn't happening, so I think they made the right call in putting my name down, fortunately for me.
Yeah, and I'd also love to know, what was your reaction to being a contender? Because I know a lot of you talk about the fan community. The fan community, I think, raised some eyebrows at that.
Yeah, I know. I loved being a contender. I loved being an underdog. It's sort of how I spent my, you know, professional footy career and stuff. I was never one of the, you know, top big players winning awards and accolades and stuff. So I felt so comfortable as an underdog and with the contenders, you know, that little bunch of misfits all put together. It was great.
Did you know any of the champions beforehand? Like, had you played on a Simon Black, for example?
I did. So I'd played against Blackie a few times, not directly, but like our team versus his team, and Abby as well. I think I'd met her once or twice through football. But they were the only ones I sort of knew personally.
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, I definitely think you could have been a champion. I think you proved to be quite a champion of Survivor, and great to see that you're such a fan and did so well out there. So thanks for coming onto the podcast. It was great to watch your game, and I look forward to seeing you on the jury.
Thank you very much, Shannon. It's been great.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everyone, there you have it. A really fun recap, I thought, with Liana. I mean, this is like a hyper-strategic season, and there were 3 episodes again of it this week, so there was so much to get into there. I hope you guys enjoyed it half as much as I enjoyed chatting to Liana about it. And then I also hope you enjoyed the interview with Sean. Obviously, you know, really smart social player. Seems like a lovely guy as well, so we got some insight into some pretty big things. I mean, the fake idol swap was definitely a big one, a huge story plot point that we were able to kind of dig into in that exit interview. And I do, you know, apologize again that we weren't able to get David or John on the X interview. You know, they had those really, really tight schedules. And I guess it's just a combination of that being really unfortunate. And then also the other part of that, which is that, you know, I've inherited RHAP, you know, to do the International Survivor content. And I'm so grateful for that. And it's such an amazing platform to have. And at the same time, this is still my first Australian Survivor season that I'm doing, and I still kind of have to work my way in there, even with this huge platform. So I guess I was really disappointed, obviously, not to talk to either of them, especially David. I mean, I would love to get him on mic in the future. Obviously, a huge priority to get him on the podcast in the future. That's a crazy mind that I need to dig into on the podcast for sure. So it was disappointing for me. I'm really sorry that we didn't get to get those interviews for you, but I'm still, you know, always working on kind of building my part in the Survivor community and my relationship with the network in order to, you know, be a really go-to platform when there is limited time for these people that are doing the exit interviews under like a more limited schedule. So I'm still working on that, and I'm, you know, obviously trying really hard with that, but I do apologize that we weren't able to get those interviews to you. I hope that you enjoyed what we were able to give you with the recap and the exit interview with Sean, and I'm just so grateful that you listened to this. If you're 2.5 hours into this podcast, thank you so much. Thank you really very much for listening. So thanks again. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hapups feed, and I will see you with Tessa next week. Bye.
Hey, Transport yourself back in time and explore the fascinating and harrowing story of the Titanic's maiden voyage. Now open at Cosi. Don't miss Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition. This epic exhibit features over 200 authentic artifacts recovered from the ocean floor. Discover poignant passenger and crew accounts and majestic recreated interiors, including the iconic Titanic Grand Staircase. Tickets for Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition are on sale now. Book your voyage at Cosi.org.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.